It's closing time. Just enough time to pick up the bottles, gather everything up.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, it's been since Wednesday that I was on the air. I want to thank Mark Levine for his help on Thursday. Thank him very, very much. He's away from the microphone having he's together with his family. This is one of the, I believe, high holy days in his faith. He'll be back to the air tomorrow evening, I do believe. So stick around for that, 5 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. But as for us, well, it was Wednesday that I was last on the air, but it feels like a long, long time. A lot more than that, because a lot of water has poured over the dam or under the bridge or whichever metaphor you prefer. And this was, today was one of those days that falls in line with that ancient curse, whoever is said to have begun it. May you live in interesting times. What an interesting day. I watched developments all day long on the stock market as though there was nothing else going on in the world. I watched the debate in the House of Representatives as if there was nothing else going on in the world. And if there is not one single talker out there who will say this, then hear it from me. I don't know what to make of it. I understand both sides, both of the honest sides of the debate and the discussion, and I know what the Repiglicans are saying too. I did notice today that the Repiglicans have found themselves a new bugbear to blame for this whole problem. So it's an accounting principle, and it's accounting it's one of them government regulations. It's the regulation that brought this all up. Government bad. Government bad. Yeah, that's what I heard a lot of. I also heard impassioned remarks by the likes of Sheila Jackson Lee and Dennis Kucinich. Got a number of other progressives who were talking about what this bill in the House did not have in it. It seemed to be the case that what wasn't in it was a much longer list than what was. The absence of any real meaningful reform for home loan debtors in this country. The absence of any sort of oversight for the bailout, should it have gone through. And as such, was too big a pill to swallow. Now, there's, you know, the funny, cliches and old sayings are cliche-ish for the reason that they contain an element of truth. One of those classic old cliches is act in haste, repent in leisure. And I couldn't help thinking that even though this has been going on for a week, this is still a mighty hasty rush to fix things. Or if, well, I won't even say fix. But to one degree or another, regardless of what barometer you use to measure it, this has crisis implications. By the time trading mercifully ended on Wall Street today, the Dow had cast off something close to 778 points. It's the worst point drop ever for the Dow Jones Industrial Averages. Although, in the reading that I've done, I haven't seen anywhere that trading was ceased. Which tells me something. It tells me, I mean, because those mechanisms are supposedly in place. Market watchers, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You never hesitate any other time, and I expect it. But I didn't see where trading was stopped. And I can't quite put my finger on it, but that seems to mean something. Stocks did lose $1.1 trillion in value today. Chew on that for a minute. Stocks lost $1.1 trillion in value today. That means that even if, under the most unlikely of circumstances, even if the House had passed the bailout today, the Senate had passed the same identical bailout today, and George Bush was there with his shaky hands and his little beady Xanaxed up eyes to sign the thing into law, what happened on Wall Street today would have taken every penny of the bailout plus $400 billion more. Now, that says something about the bailout, and I think underneath it was one of the underlying misgivings, because we have done this all year long. It didn't just start happening a month or so ago. It didn't start with Bear Stearns. We've been doing welfare for Wall Street for darn nigh a year now, in one form or another. And nothing seems to help. Nothing seems to cure this disease, this illness. So that's worth contemplating. Wall Street lost more today than the entire bailout was worth. I would hope that the House of Representatives, because something does need to be done. As I said last week, the urge to say, burn, baby, burn, is exactly that. It's an urge that comes from a sort of a caveman reptile brain place, and it is a surface reaction. But you know what? Don't kid yourself. Don't think, as was said to me in an email earlier today, that folks who aren't in the market have any right to be smug. We don't. Because you know what? You live in the United States of crony capitalist America. And whether you think you are or not, you're in the market. Your labor is in the market. Your mind is in the market. Your very well-being is in the market. The future of your children and grandchildren is in the market. Because I reiterate something that I said all last week. It is something that anyone walking into a casino must take to heart the minute they step through the doors, and that is rule one. The house never loses. The house never loses. Don't think for a minute that because the Dow Jones Industrial Average tossed 778 points today, that the president of Goldman Sachs got on his cell phone and called home and said, honey, it's beans for dinner tonight, because he didn't. He got on his cell phone and he called home and said, honey, it's Chateaubriand just like every night. We're still stinking filthy rich. And we'll stick the little suckers for it one way or the other. We'll make it, we'll get it all back. We'll make them pay. Don't think that didn't happen, because it did. The fat cats aren't sweating, because the fat cats know they can get it out of your hide anytime, anywhere, because they have the power to take the roof out from over your head, sunshine. And that's why any reform that takes place is going to have to be real reform. You want the federal government to guarantee something? Let the federal government buy the bad mortgages outright and administer them at a lower non-predatory rate of interest and keep people in their homes. Let the federal government, look, bankruptcies alone, driven by medical expenses, have taken a tremendous toll on the working class. You know me, lower class, middle class, why argue about position? There are two classes in this country, whether you like it or not. There is a working class and a non-working class. The guy that called his wife and said, honey, it's Chateaubriand as far as the eye can see, he's in the non-working class. I don't care how much you make per year. If you're a minimum wage worker, if you're somebody working at a convenience store, or if you deliver pizza, or like one of our friends here of the show, if you're a barista at Starbucks, you're working class. You're also working class if you're making $250,000 a year at a software firm. You're working class. Because someone else is in charge of whether or not you get paid, whether or not you eat. And Wall Street will take it out of your hide. Don't think for an instant that because you're making more money than the minimum wage worker, that you're somehow less susceptible to the predation of the Wall Street welfare titans. You're not. Don't think that because you're not in the market that you're not subject to those same predatory impulses on Wall Street, because you are. This is the reality of trickle-down economics. This is the real trickle-down economics. Our wealth did not trickle up to Wall Street. It ran uphill in an absolute negation of every physical law imaginable. For 8 long years of George W. Bush, dim leader, for 12 years of Ronnie Reagan, and mercifully only 4 of Poppy Bush, out of touch old boob, the very laws of gravity and physics were defied as wealth flooded uphill. Really, that's how it works. With the hope that a little bit, the crumb scrapings from the table, the drips and drops in the pipeline, would trickle back down to us. Which was, of course, a complete and utter lie. One of the few things I ever agreed with George H.W. Bailout Bush lies in what he called Reaganomics. Voodoo economics. Because they were. because it was crazy, because it was scary, because it was the kind of economic ripoff policy that took place in the dark and still of the night, accompanied by little more than the gurgling cry of the recently slit. And that's us. That's us. You know, I couldn't, in reflecting upon the fact that the fat boys are never going to go hungry, I couldn't help remembering something. Remember the Great Depression? Wall Street crash, 1929? All the economic misery that followed in the relatively young Hoover administration all the way to its merciful end? The bailouts that were attempted and failed in 1931? Remember all that? Here's a detective question for you. Where were the Bushes? Where was the Walker family and the Bush family? Where were they? Were they standing in soup lines? Were they waiting online for bread? Were they grateful just to get a Civil Conservation Corps or Works Progress Administration job under Franklin Delano Roosevelt? Were they? The Walkers, the Bushes? Were they? Not even a little bit. Maybe they were still fat. Through the worst economic misery of the last 150 years, the Bush family kept eating that Chateaubriand. And they did so to the point that they even felt comfortable taking their wealth and their well-being and using it to the benefit of the man who was financing Adolf Hitler. Really, yeah. Sorry, little lurking wingnuts, but it's true. The Bush family did business with the guy who made it possible for Hitler to be Hitler. They did it through a company called Brown Brothers Harriman. And Prescott Bush, the grandfather of George H.W. Bush, was one of the capos de tutti capo of that undertaking. And that profiteering on the blood and the sweat of American servicemen and women fighting in the Second World War, and the tears of the mothers and the grandfathers and the grandfathers and fathers, the brothers, the sisters, the aunts, the uncles, the cousins and the nieces, the friends and the neighbors, continued until Prescott Bush was busted during the Second World War in the Trading with the Enemy Act. The bust is available for inspection in the National Archives to this day, unless it's had that Indiana Jones thing to it where they put it in a crate and haul it away in a warehouse. It happened. And it's not just the Bushes. Did the Rockefellers ever go to a soup kitchen for a meal that they needed? No. No. And there are oodles of folks just like that all over America, and they're gonna be fine. I'm not worried about them. It's us I'm worried about. Because, again, I remind you, the House always wins, and they own the House. You don't. The very heart and soul of being a repiglickin, who also happens to be working class, which is insane, lies in the fact that repiglickins who are working class look at the manifest greed and avarice of their repiglickin betters and they think, someday I'll be like them. And then to hell with the rest of y'all, because I'll have mine too. Because see, we're repiglickins. We believe in the ability of the American people to get greedy and avaricious. And tell the rest of America to go themselves. It's nuts. But that's the be-all and end-all with a little soupçon of religious insanity thrown in for spice and flavor. That is the be-all and end-all of being a working-class repig-licking. I can be as rich as they did. Mm-hmm. Dang sure. The numbers? Oh, what a difference. What a difference 7 years makes. 7.5 years. 7.75. On January the 19th, 2001, the Dow Jones Industrial Average stood at 10,587.59. Rock solid. On September the 29th, 2008, after yea, verily, 7.75 hellish years of George W. Bush and an administration absolutely awash in greed, in fraud, in utter, tawdry, street-level criminality, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed today at 10,365.45. Do the math. 10,587.59 minus 10,365.45. That's a net. Yeah, you better off now. Hey, how you feeling about that? How you feeling about that third Bush term under McSame? Huh? Still not convinced? Let's look at the Nasdaq, the technology stocks. January 19th, 2001, as William Jefferson Clinton exits the White House, 2770.38. The Nasdaq today, 1983.73. I'm getting pretty close to 1,000 points. The CPI, 175, January 19th, 2001. Consumer Price Index, September 29th, 2008, 219. And here's the fun one. Here's the one that may actually explain more than anything else. The dollar's value in comparison with the euro. January 19th, 2001. Dollar exchange rate with the euro, 1.068. Dollar exchange rate with the euro as of today, 0.695. I'm screwed. You're screwed. We're screwed. As long as we're not a Wall Street banker. Because if the Wall Street bankers had your money, you've lost a bunch of it. They're not going to pay for it because they, you know, that's not their job. The free market only applies to you, Sunshine, not them. Hey, honey, get some of those $15,000 a half-ounce white Italian truffles and throw a big handful on my Chateaubriand tonight, sweetie. And dust off that really old bottle of Baron de Rothschild. We'll drink it through a straw. Because we're staying rich, baby. We're staying rich. Late Saturday night, I saw the news that Paul Newman had checked out. Paul Newman had some horrifying kind of cancer. My heart goes out to his family. If anything exists after this present physical corporeal existence, I'm pretty sure that Paul Newman, who poured $250 million, more or less, give or take a million, into attempts to make life better for sick children, among other things. I'm pretty sure if there's something good to follow this existence, that he got it. Perhaps all he got was a well-deserved rest. I had one of those irrational responses to seeing that Paul Newman was gone. Never knew the guy, never spoke to the guy, never saw the guy in person, just watched the movies. But I was saddened, because he was someone I had admired. He was a man of character. And I couldn't help thinking earlier today that there is a whole lot in this Wall Street nightmare that is reminiscent of one of my favorite films of his, Cool Hand Luke. Because Cool Hand Luke always, all along, stood as a metaphor for those who would not knuckle under, would not go along and get along, who would not play the game simply to improve their own well-being. I was reminded of Strother Martin saying, "You'll get used to them bracelets, but you'll never forget them jingling." And that's the way it's supposed to be for us. We get used to the bracelets. We get used to the leg irons. We get used to the chains. So much so that we forget we have them on. Because we might have a 50-inch big screen TV to take our attention away from them. Or maybe we've got vital information out there in the media to remind us that, oh my God, Clay Aiken is gay! But every now and then, when the screaming and the swirling and the vertigo lets go for a second or two, like Strother Martin said in Cool Hand Luke, we still hear the jingling. And the jingling, in this case, is of your money in Wall Street's pocket. At least that's the way I see it. Let's see what's happening on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, what's up, Susan?
Well, I just ran across an article that I thought was interesting. I just put it up on Centab. It's entitled, "How Wall Street Can Bail Itself Out Without Destroying the Dollar." And it's written by Tom Hartman.
Ah. Well, leave the smart stuff to Tom.
Yeah.
I always do.
Yeah. The basis is really simple. Rather than go through all of this hoorah that we're going through right now, go back into history after Hoover, go back to after FDR did a cold reboot on the financial system, and do what he did. Create an agency to fund a bailout, loan that agency the money from the Treasury, and then have that agency tax Wall Street to pay the Treasury back. And it's been done before, and it works.
I don't doubt that it does. There are lots of things that work, and that's why the nature of this... And it's been recognized in a lot of quarters of this country, whether it be an editorial cartoonist or editorial writers or reporters or ordinary folks just talking it over a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to this, Susan, that smells of too much haste. You know, it's one of those things where you have to
capitalism.
Well, no, but it's not just that. It's that you got to act fast. You know, make your decision fast. Okay, I'm standing here. I ain't got all day. You got to pick one of the shells. One of them shells got the P on it. One of these cards is the queen. All you got to do is pick the queen. Come on, hurry up. Tell me which card to turn. There's a little too much of that.
Yeah, way too much of that. And it makes me nervous, and it makes me think, okay, what else are they covering up? And to me,
Everything. The whole 8 years has been a fraud, Susan. You know that.
Yeah. To me, it's a holdup. It's a giant heist.
It's a heist. It's a Brinks job on steroids.
Exactly. Now, for people, this Hartman article is very, very dense. And for people who want to read it, go up to CenTab. It's basically the first article on the page. You know, I recommend it. But, you know, as far as, you know, you mentioned Paul Newman. Me, I was thinking of the character in HUD, who was totally morally bankrupt.
Well, yeah, it's opposite ends of the same spectrum, yes.
Yeah. I've got to go.
Oh,
I'll
okay.
be right back.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Yeah, the HUD. I can... But, you know, you remember how Cool Hand Luke begins? Cool Hand Luke begins with Paul Newman's Luke character using a pipe cutter to cut down... And he's got a long neck beer in his hand. And he's cutting down parking meters. One could argue that it was just plain criminal mischief, but that was a form of imagery. Paul Newman was number 19, made the top 20. Paul Newman was number 19 on Richard Nixon's enemies list. He said it was one of the proudest honors he had ever received in his life. And I understand that. All right, let's keep this rolling and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
If there was hope, it must lie in the proles, because only there, in those swarming, disregarded masses, 85% of the population of Oceania, could the force to destroy the party ever be generated. The party could not be overthrown from within. Its enemies, if they had any enemies, had no way of coming together or even of identifying one another. If the legendary Brotherhood existed, as just possibly it might, it was inconceivable that its members could ever assemble in larger numbers than twos and threes. Rebellion meant a look in the eyes, an inflection of the voice, and at the most, an occasional whispered word. But the proles, if only they could somehow become conscious of their own strength, would have no need to conspire. They needed only to rise up and shake themselves like a horse shaking off flies. If they choose, they could blow the party to pieces tomorrow morning. Surely, sooner or later, it must occur to them to do it. And yet, that's the bell, Bob.
Yeah, I know.
This is the bell, and this is beautiful. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Well, now hold on just a minute. We gotta indulge in a little bit of worry, because there are Americans who have been ripped off, Albert.
I know.
I mean, what do you say to somebody who just lost $8,000 in the last 5 days?
Well, I'm sure I lost a lot more than that.
Right.
I mean. But I'm not at the same. What do you say to somebody? Well, here's the thing. And I mean, and it's actually, I'm seeing so many different things running through my head, and I keep seeing Monty Python, they're all on the cross, and, you know, always look on the bright. We still have us, we have each other. This illusion that is collapsing now. And now, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know how many letters I sent, I don't know how many phone calls I made to my congressman. This morning, I woke up. Well, I had to check the news, of course. I woke up, I went there, and I'm sitting there seeing what they're doing. I'm like, oh, good, they're going to vote on it, huh? All right. I wrote a letter to my congressman, and he did vote for it. And, you know, I told him, I'm like, you know, you work for me. Do not vote for this. Just do not. That's your order of the day. Don't do it. He did it, but, you know, at the same time.
But you'll remember that.
Oh, I will remember it, but and he pisses me off all the time. But honestly, though, I think this was a grand move, and I'm not the biggest fan of some of these sons of bitches, but this is a grand move by the Democrats. That's how I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it like what happened was is the Republicans, they keep trying these Hail Marys. And you know what happens in a Hail Mary. It either fails or gets intercepted or, you know, or becomes a...
Or it falls harmlessly to the ground. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. So now we're sitting here looking at, they tried the Hail Mary with Penguin. They tried the Hail Mary with this. And they were going to try the Hail Mary with this. It's just McCain's so slow, he couldn't get it in gear enough. And he couldn't, it wasn't as, 4 years ago, that wouldn't have happened with Dave Letterman. You know, the curtain is totally disintegrated in front of them. And they don't know which way to run. They're running, oh, we need this bailout. Oh, you're not going to give golden parachutes. Okay, we're against it. It's a populist move because they started seeing that the people are like, hey, wait a minute. Why should we bail out these robber barons? Why should we bail out these people that actually make these robber barons look like jokes in terms of, you know, some of these hedge fund people, making $1 billion a year? I mean, come on. I mean, that's ridiculous, $1 billion. So, I mean, we sit here looking at, we're just looking at them fail in every way, shape, and form. They couldn't win this if they wanted to, because now if it collapses even further, okay, as it's probably going to do, okay, it is. It's gonna fall harder. And when it does, well, who's going to be sitting there holding the cake? They are. Why? They want to make a big deal like, oh, we didn't let this thing pass. Now, if they would have let it pass, all would have happened was, it might have, inflated us so we wouldn't, go face first to a cliff, but it's not going to change the inevitable. The market's overinflated. You got companies like Google.
Well, you've got to sit there. Yeah, what, Google dropped below $400 for the first time today?
Last month, they were $600. This month, they're $383. Okay, I've been looking at all this stuff today. We're sitting here looking.
What's the Google do? I mean, realistically,
nothing.
Besides sell ads.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, but let's look at a couple of things. First of all, the vote tally had barely been announced before Republicans ran to the microphones to scream that Nancy Pelosi killed this bill because she made a partisan speech at the very end. Well, I watched it.
Yeah, but Bob, nobody believed
I watched that,
that
speech.
That. Nah, people believe that like they believe John McCain can get a hard on without Viagra. Nobody believes that. Nobody. Come on.
They will never pass up an opportunity to politicize
right.
any potential for tragedy or because they were running like hell to get away from George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't say that it was an accounting practice. Mark to market. That's the name of the accounting practice. Mark to market. It was all Mark to market's fault. I heard that more than once.
Yeah.
This is they ran though to the micro so Barney Frank came out and said because somebody hurt their feelings they decide to punish the country.
Yeah. See, this is in the sense now the Democrats can play the role. That's what they've done is the Republicans basically fumbled and now the Democrats we control the clock. I mean, we have the clock now, and where we need to go, which is, we need a new deal. We need another deal, okay? Hey, what's wrong with making a deal every 80 years? Weren't we supposed to water the tree of liberty making a new deal?
Yeah, that's something that I got to thinking about. If you want, and of course this has been said time and time and time again, and it was even partially reflected in the phony baloney George Bush the stimulus package.
Uh-huh.
If you really want to make the economy do something, you do it. You have to do it from the ground up.
Yep.
You want to fire up the economy? Never mind a $300 or a $500 check or a $750 check. Double the food stamp allotment from $3 a day to $6. Because it's not like people are standing in line for commodity cheese anymore. They go to the store to buy that stuff. Poor folks do.
Yep.
And look who would benefit. The retailer, the producer, the prices reflect transportation costs, so the trucking companies that get it to market would benefit. Boost unemployment compensation, extend unemployment compensation, raise the minimum wage for the love of God to a living wage. And you'll see this economy blossom and bloom.
Bob, look at what's going to happen. When Barack becomes president and this new energy, renewable energy initiatives get going, I mean, you know, I think people have been downcalling and say, oh, it's going to take forever. It's going to take 10 years. You know how they always tell us it's going to take 10 years, mm-hmm. and then 10 years later it's another 10? You know, I think when, you know, I think this is going to inject enough reality into the veins of this creature that when we do realize, all right, no, we have to get this done now. Like, we will, like, you know, we've shown before in the past that we can get tremendous things done very quickly. You know, I mean...
Anybody who's ever read the mission statement of something like the Apollo Alliance,
mm-hmm.
Or Green for All, knows that there are economic policies there that can reinvigorate this nation like never before.
Yep.
You know, covering up phony baloney deals by bankers, all of whom are sitting there playing old maid with our money. You know, fixing it at the is no way to fix it. Is no way to fix a busted economy. And frankly, my thoughts on it, and I could be wrong because I'm not a trained economist. I'm just a hillbilly elitist. But I bet you that Mark Levine would probably get on board with this. I can't help thinking that we're not going to do anything by making a phony baloney economic scam look less like a phony baloney economic scam, because it's the lipstick on the pig thing, and it's actually lipstick on a corpse. It's still a phony baloney economic scam because it's based on stuff that isn't real.
That's right. And that's why I'm telling you, that's what we're going to be sitting here. I mean, you know, in 80 years, we'll see if our grandkids learn from this mistake that the generations that made this mistake made. You know, we'll see. You know, I think we're going to see greed.
You know? Well, okay, wait a minute. I got to take issue with you for a minute, Albert.
What?
You said, see if our grandkids learn. It's never the problem. That is never the problem. The grandkids learned, to one extent or another, from the Great Depression. Okay? The generation that endured the Great Depression, most of those people would have as soon torn their own eyeballs out as vote for another damned Republican that did what was done to them the last time to them again. It's the great grandchildren. All right.
Right.
It's what happens when those lessons go out of common currency. It is it's a failure of the people to tell those stories and make sure that generations beyond the grandkids know the lessons.
Mm-hmm. So here it is. Here's the opportunity. You know, I mean, and sure, this next paradigm, it's actually going to give us even more. If you can believe it, I'm sure you can. I mean, just envision, it's going to give us so much more leeway in order to just take everything for granted. You know, that's what's going to be the next, but we're not there yet, but we're just, you know, now we're going to have to build it. But that's just one of those things that, you know, and I think that people will start being taught how to think. And this is an important aspect of it. You know, like, all people think about is in the now. Like, you know, we're going to have to, with schools and education, everything. I mean, I hate to say it's not going to be indoctrination, but it's going to have to be real education. It's going to have to be a real education that's not going to be able to be, you know, easily, you know, dominated by any political ideology. I mean, you know, Republicans, certainly, sure, yeah, let's give them some blame, but there's plenty of blame to go around on the Democratic side as well. You know, so I don't want to get too much like that because I don't think you really can. I think, for example, conservatives might make a comeback soon, but I think these current middle witty washy and the super right extremists, I think they're going to go back underground.
Well, here's a list from our buddy David Swanson over at afterdowningstreet.org. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you think of this.
All right.
He says, "What's our message now? It's a tentative thank you to those who voted no, combined with a demand that they not cave in, and a promise to work to unseat those who voted yes unless they redeem themselves immediately." And here's his list of what he wants. "I want a bill immediately to ban predatory mortgage lending, ban states from preventing cities from restricting predatory lending, and commit the federal government to allowing states full freedom to restrict predatory lending."
Yeah,
I want
out.
"I want a bill establishing a maximum wage at 10 times the minimum wage and including all forms of income in that calculation and raising the minimum wage however much required to pass the bill. I want the tax system created by that bill to pay for any necessary bailouts and want such bailouts enacted and overseen by Congress. I also want a Tobin tax on all transactions in finance, insurance, and real estate, including currency transactions. I want Congress to haul fraudulent bankers into Washington and force them to testify, fire them without compensation as part of any bailouts, and refer them to the Justice Department for prosecution. I want serious regulation of Wall Street. I want a 5-year moratorium on foreclosures and a bailout of homeowners equal to any bailout of bankers. And finally, I want $700 billion invested in green energy jobs immediately to be paid for by a tax on carbon emissions. And he says he wants them all in one bill.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me. I mean, did you even see? Did you? I'm sure you've been on the Internet this weekend. You saw Congress just passed a housing bill. Get another mortgage. It's through low rates. You know, they had ads like that all over the place. You know, on the news sites. So yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, you sit there, you look at how these people, these guys, they're just vultures. You know, they're just vultures. They're constantly trying to.
Well, what's the difference between these predators and the guys that I see? And when I go down south, they don't exist here. What's the difference between them and these guys I see? Easy loans now, cash for your car title. We lend money. You know what I'm talking? Payday lenders.
Yeah, do you know who? Yeah, well, here, for you got to watch a movie, In Debt We Trust. You got to watch that. It's really fun. There's another couple of those movies, but you know who owns those things? Those payday loans? The big banks own those.
Wouldn't be surprised in the least.
No, that's not a little guy. It looks like no. It looks. It's made to look like that. I'm serious. This is a product. That is a product. That's another reason we're in the situation we're in. It's because they realize that the better segment of the market is the poor. They want those people buried. They want them buried. They're more profitable. Yeah, that's why, you know, the minute you declare bankruptcy, well, they're all over you. They're all over you. They'd love to give you credit because they're going to be able to rent this, you know, to loan the same amount of money out at a, you know, phenomenally higher rate. You know, my wife has the far better credit out of this group, and you know, we're locked into rates that are awesome, but only because, you know. You know, we got locked into those rates, but you know, I could sit in there and have certainly more credit, but I'd be paying 23s and 25s. You know, so you could sit there and make mistakes, and you know, when you do that, they know that, you know, actually bad credit is better than no credit if you really want to look at it. You know, they love bad credit. Mm-mm-mm. That's their meat and potatoes right there. You know.
Well, what did we learn a few months back? The credit card companies actually make more every year on late fees and penalties than they do on the actual interest on the money lent?
Yeah, it's madness. I mean, you're going to be paying, you know, if you sit there and if you pay the minimum, like, what is it? It takes years to pay the minimum off. You're not even, you know, if you pay the $25 a month for, you know, an $2,000, you know, card, if you're paying the $25, you're going to pay that for 10 years. And that's why they like it, because they know that the people that are poor are going to pay the minimal that they can. And they know that the minimal that they can, you know, plus they're the ones that most likely will default, and they will own them. I'm telling you, just like with this last bankruptcy, this is another reason that this is so outrageous. And if there's a time to wake up, it's now. This is, I think they might have grumbled us up a little bit. And I think, you know, these next few years, they're gonna woe what they've sowed. I'm telling you right now, because all this crap. Bob, that bankruptcy bill that passed a few years ago is awful. You can't write off credit card debt. You can't write off health. You know.
Oh, I know. I know.
So yeah, but what's next? What's going to be next is, like, your debt will pass on to your children. That's what they want. You know that. You know, your debt will pass on to your children. Like, when you die, if you know, whatever Social Security was left will go to them, if there was any left. If they, you know, that's what they want. They want it all. They want to own you. You know, they want you to be subjugated, and you know, they want their lifestyle. I mean, I was hearing a little radio thing with the Bug's Life, you know. You know, we got to keep, it's a little tiny group of nothing. It's the tiniest, littlest group of people you ever imagine compared to the rest of us. You know, we cannot, like, even pretend that they have that kind of authority. That's the problem. If we sit there and we let them pretend like they have the authority because they know what these things are, then we're going to go right back under their spell. I mean, this is do or die now. You know, it might be rough. Yeah, sure, the illusion is going to come to an end. But I think, you know, the new paradigm that, you know, we're going to have with these green jobs, we're smart enough now. We can do this. I mean, that green jobs is going to be huge. Laying high-speed railways around the country, okay, because planes are going to be non-existent. I mean, look at what they can do now. Look at what they can do with diesel engines, right? 1 liter of fuel takes 100 miles to train, 100 miles on a liter of fuel, or however that works, once that thing gets going. You know, you sit there, you look at some of these high-speed rails, electric engines, right? Man, the efficiencies, the things that were coming through with technology. I mean, if you really look at it, the old paradigm ways, right, the old things that we're invested in, those are like the manure and the crud that the new life is going to have to go through. I mean, if this was the 1800s, all right, and you were invested in whale blubber for oil and home heating, and I was invested in petroleum that came out of the ground, who's going to be doing better in 10 years?
Oh, sure. No, you're making the buggy whip analogy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the anger of the buggy whip manufacturers at the rise of the newfangled horseless carriage.
Mm-hmm.
There are things to be found here. There are opportunities to be, and I use this in not in a negative but in a positive sense, to be exploited.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have a new round, Albert, of finger pointing.
Mm.
With what the Republicans have already done. You know, just for the record, it was 95 Democrats and 133 Republicans who beat this bill back.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Yep. 90 Democrats.
It was 140 Democrats and 65 Republicans who voted for it.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. You know, I mean, this is why the only way I could say Nancy Pelosi can stay is if they orchestrated it like that. If they said, you are voting nay, you are voting yay, you are voting nay, you are voting
I don't
nay.
Think they even had to do that because there were enough people of principle, Kucinich, Jackson Lee,
mm-hmm.
a few other Democrats, who voiced principled opposition to the bill, not because it was wrong in toto, but because it didn't do enough. And frankly, mm-hmm. I understand their skepticism because I share it when you hear somebody on either side say, yeah, but we'll come back and fix it. Okay, if it's something that we can come back and fix, then for the love of God, fix it now.
Now, exactly. We'll do it right now.
I just saw some polling data, Albert, that says that Republicans are taking the backlash on this early on.
Yeah, they are. Oh, good.
And frankly, if we can, I hate to calculate this in terms of politics. I despise and loathe to do so. But if we can run a few more of the bastards out of the race, out of the Congress, we might actually start doing some of the things you're talking about. And we might mm-hmm. be able to fix it come January.
Yes, indeed. Yes, sir.
I noticed that the Senate Minority Leader, that chinless wonder, Mitch McConnell, that guy's in a dead heat with his Democratic opponent in Kentucky. Now, it's Kentucky, mind you, so don't be thinking that you're going to get somebody coming into the Senate from Kentucky who's a Democrat who's all liberal and progressive and stuff. It ain't going to work that way. But he's not going to be as god-awful and as hateful to workers and as overall hateful to the working class as Mitch McConnell. On his worst day, the guy won't be that.
Well, we certainly hope not. I mean, I think that's maybe why I'm so hopeful, because now I know, now I can just totally see. I mean, this is moments before the knockout. I mean, and I think that, you know, that's why they're scurrying to and fro. I think they're going to lose even more seats. I think that, you know, we're going to see a landslide. It's just going to be an absolute landslide. This is going to be, I mean, this is rape. I know. That's just one of those nomenclatures we use in my group of people. But anyway, you know, it's going to be brutal. It's going to be a stomping. It's just bad. I mean, for them. And it's something that, you know, I think people realize. Man, I haven't talked to a single person that's actually really made any sense when it comes to this, what they're talking about. Look, they can't even keep themselves inflated. Look at Palin's drops. Man, it's just awful. You know, the Republicans can try to say that.
Oh, yeah, Kathleen Parker's even out there saying, Sarah, please, please, resign from the ticket. Say you want to spend more time with little baby calculus. Do something, but quit.
Yeah, exactly, calculus. Exactly. I mean, you said that, and you listen to what we're looking at. Look at these people. And they talk about do-nothing Congress. Man, they've done 100-plus freaking filibusters. 100 of them. How many, see, now, this is the thing that the Democrats, I mean, you know, I know that they're playing Aikido or Judo or something like that. You know, they're doing Judo moves. But sometimes, you know, you want them to kind of stand up so they're, you know, there's... You know, that they're not using all that for us, and we don't have to take a kind of beating that we're having to take right now. I mean, I understand that it's all for the best, and, you know, once the chips fall, we're going to be much better off. Our children, you know, I know it's scary looking, but our children right now are going to have a better future than we did. You know, I mean, man, your kids might have a job off planet now. Yeah, and I know that's a tough thing to say. I know it's a little bit of a dreamer, but man, once we get some of these bastards that have done 100-plus filibusters, Bush vetoes everything. You know, once we get these people out, maybe, you know, all this tension, all this pressure that we have, that everybody wants to do something. I mean, look at how much money Barack Obama's raising. None of this stuff would have happened. You wouldn't have existed 10 years ago. Or 15 years ago. This kind of stuff, these things are unprecedented. And the wave that I'm talking about, it's a blind thing. It just comes up, it waves, and it builds and builds and builds. You know, you're not going to, just like a wave, it comes out of nowhere. It just, all of a sudden, there it is. And where we're going is a beautiful place. You know, this gives me hope. If that bill would have passed, I'd be real depressed right now. I would. Because that would have just put another, you know, that would have put another brick in the wall, another chain, a link on the shackles. It would have been much worse. Now we're actually taking a step to remove these chains. You know, I mean, and granted, we're going to have to, it's not going to like, this is going to be a complete rout. But I do think, you know, we might be able to achieve 5,000 years of a golden age. We might be able to achieve something like that now. Going on the route that we were going just a few hours ago, that was possible, or wouldn't have. And that's one of the things that I liked about the, you know, the Democrats. They did their work, they fought, but they still left a bill that was horrible. I was reading it last night when they released it, and it was just, my brain was just getting sucked into the ether. It was just awful. But, you know, once they, you know, they left it stinky enough that, you know, you could sit and, you know, I think there was 85% of the calls were hostile for the people like me. I was writing. Were you right?
I did.
Exactly. We did. I mean, this is something that, you know, God, I would have loved to see this kind of stuff for the Iraq war. But this is the kind
of
thing.
Well, this is because, but bear in mind, Albert, were it not for the Iraq war and occupation, this probably would not have happened today, because it is the track record of the Bush administration more than anything else. This is not reactionaryism, okay, or reactionism on the part of the American people. This is the just saying, oh, hell no, I ain't going to do that. No, this is the American people saying, wait a minute, if you guys in Washington didn't pay attention to the movie, we did.
Mm-hmm.
We remember what happened the last time we were the hoodooed into a hasty, risk-laden decision by the Bush administration. We ain't doing it twice.
Exactly. But see, that's what I mean. The more they squeeze, the harder that they go to try to, you know, to try to implement their fascism, you know, the faster it's going to collapse. It's just, there's certain things that you just can't do, and that's one of them. I mean, it's the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine.
Well, here. Albert, good talking to you, brother. I've got a couple more blinks I'm going to try to grab.
I'll certainly enjoy them. You take care.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Our buddy Albert in Wisconsin. And there are opportunities in this. It's a question, ultimately, it's a question of whether or not Congress will seize those opportunities. Now, of course, and the really sickening part out of all this is that both sides will try to make political hay out of it. I guess that much of it is just simply in the nature of the process and not to be avoided. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Reverbo here.
Hey, what's up, Reverbo?
Well, the first thing is that was just an outstanding list of items you read, and you went through them rather quickly, and I was wondering if you could tell me again, where did you see that, and how can I, is that on a website? How can I go look at that? That was great.
Which list?
You read a list when you were talking to Albert about, like, there were about...
David Swanson.
David Swanson, okay.
I just got it. I got it via an email. Let's see.
Is he a columnist or a...
No, he's... I'm not sure exactly. He is an activist. I think that's the best thing to call David Swanson. Over at the central clearing house for much of David's thinking, I think, is probably still after DowningStreet.org.
Oh yeah, sure. All right, that was just a great... I never heard it so put so succinctly and so reasonably and obviously, you know. That's what it was. It was, of course, none of those things are ever going to happen.
Well, I don't think none of them are ever going to happen. I don't think a maximum wage 10 times the minimum wage. I don't see that happening. Because it's not an upward redistribution of wealth. We're going to have to wait a little bit before that kind of thing comes to reality, Reverbo.
They haven't seemed to be too eager to haul the bad guys in and make them sweat either.
That's this administration.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Barack Obama has come out and he has said he is furious that the bailout was not passed. Apparently, John McCain says he's furious, too, and it's all the Democrats' fault.
Yeah.
Now, how is the Democrats' fault when it was a majority of Repiglicans voting against the thing? I haven't yet figured out, but maybe that's because I don't have his steel trap rusted shut 72-year-old mind.
You know, you obviously saw that debate on Thursday night.
Friday, wasn't it?
Was it Friday?
In fact, I watched it among friends. It was quite engaging.
Yeah, I was sort of falling asleep there towards the end. I don't think we learned anything new, really, from that debate. But it's sort of, you might say that things sort of coalesced. The big picture sort of sunk in. At least it did for me. And I looked at these people, these two guys, and really it was so clear that the one... And even if it was Kennedy or even if it was Roosevelt, it didn't matter. The one always says, yes, we can. And Bob, the other side just says, no, we can't.
We have nothing to fear but fear. We have nothing but fear. Yeah.
They're so
God bless America.
About it. They're so smug and patronizing about it. It's almost like... McCain looks at you and he goes, come on, you know it can't ever get any better. Come on, people. Come on, tree huggers. Come on, green energy folks. Come on, you pie in the sky people. You know it's just going to be the same as it always is. Come on, where have you been? They've just got this smug attitude about it like, I'm just dreaming. You can't ever make it better. You can't ever have anything, you know, that benefits everybody. It's just going to, you don't expect really to. You know, Wall Street to bail itself out now, do you? We're just going to have to have...
And that's the trick. Why is there no consideration in here of really, really, really making Wall Street pay for its own excesses?
I don't know. I mean, I was thinking it's like you robbed the bank, only I have to serve your time in jail. Now, I don't know. I don't know, thank you. You know, They always tell you no. There's always a reason they have for why it's not going to be the way you dream. What was Kennedy's?
Robert Kennedy's. Some people see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they should be and ask why not.
Yes, one of those sort of things. And these people constantly are telling you sorry, it's no. Whatever it is, it's no. And here you have a guy like Obama just basically looking at it going, wait a second here. This is bullshit. You know, what do you want me to do? Let's get going. We can do whatever we want. Problem is, I'm afraid we're broke. We have nothing. We can't raise money, but that's a little detail we'll have to figure out.
Yeah, but that's the part where my head starts to spin and the little pain starts between my temples. Because, I don't know. I heard a couple of times people in favor of the bailout today say, well, you know, Ben Bernanke came here, and Ben Bernanke is the world's, one person actually said this, the world's leading authority on the Great Depression. Well, I'll take issue with that. Someone who actually got a family through the Great Depression without having their entire world completely collapse. Now, there's somebody who was an authority on the Depression. Not Ben Bernanke. But this idea of deferring to one person on all of this, if we were talking about a genuinely brilliant individual with no axes, no political axes to grind, that might be the case. But I don't know that anybody can fully put in one cohesive proposal something that remedies everything that's gone wrong. Because, you know, it was a year ago, Reverbo, that I was screaming, everything is broken. Everything is broken. And it was then, and it is now.
Well, the writing's been on the wall here for a couple of years. I mean, there's nothing. And plus, their little bailout plan has also been on a shelf for half a year, too.
You don't just come up with a three-page bailout plan? No. That's like coming up with something like that is like reducing the Iliad to a haiku.
Yeah.
That takes work. That thing's been, it's been around for a while. It's like the project for a new American century. You know, no sooner were the buildings laying in a smoking heap of rubble than bang, there they were with this plan, and it was in full flower.
You would at least thought the thing would have been four pages long. I mean, you know.
Right. So, you know, something stinks. But it can be paid for. What we're seeing now is that the people who made the terrible mistakes are simply trying to make sure that they do not pay for those mistakes.
Well, like we were talking about last week or somewhere, I mean, it's like the fix was in. They look at themselves, they know what's going to happen, they know the house of cards is going to fall, and they also know that they're going to get the bailout. And they knew it 2 years ago, 5 years ago, when this whole you're too big to fail concept was a whole, it's just that's the plan. And so you just laugh. I'm just, the terrifying thing, Bob, is that all these people, I mean, Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and the entire gang of Wall Street crooks, all of them, I'm just afraid they're all going to skip out of town with all the money and a big laugh on their face, and we're never going to get them.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I don't think even Paraguay will take George Bush now.
Did he buy a ranch down there, or is that?
Yeah, like multi hundreds of thousands of acres.
That's not an urban legend. He really did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's going to live down there with Dr. Mengele and all those guys? Oh, God, I couldn't believe it when I heard it. Yeah, Paraguay, that'd be a good spot for him. But you know,
go out in a blaze of glory, shooting it out with the Federales. Oh, there's a Paul Newman reference again.
Perfect. Yeah, the last scene in... Now, there was a guy that knew, understood what noblesse oblige was. That guy, I read, he gave away over $100 million to charity.
$250
million. $250?
Yeah, through Newman's Own and the hole-in-the-wall camps and the various other charities. Yeah, $250 million.
What an amazing man. Talk about it.
And you know what? It never affected his standard of living.
Funny.
Ain't it?
He was my guy. I can remember...
He couldn't, you know, his money was no, I don't know how he lived, but just by way of analogy, his money was no good in any bar in the world. Okay?
Yeah.
He lived his life in such a way that others wanted to do for him, to support his undertakings, his projects. Newman's Own started out, Socceroni spaghetti sauce?
Something like that, yeah.
Because he made this really good spaghetti sauce, and all his neighbors would say, oh, Paul, that's such good spaghetti sauce. Would you make me a jar the next time you make a batch? And he went from giving away his spaghetti sauce to his neighbors to saying, wait a minute. Why don't I make people's lives better with this? And the next thing you know, there's a production process and a canning company, and it's on the grocery stores. And when I had a choice, I can have ragoop, or I can have the pre-god awful, or I can do some good in the world and buy a jar of Newman's Own. I bought the Newman's Own. I got a bottle of Newman's Own salad dressing in the fridge right now.
There you go.
Because it was one of those effortless ways of doing the right thing. If you give people an opportunity to do the right thing and don't make it hurt too much, 9 times out of 10, they'll do it, Reverbo.
Well, there's some good people out there, and he was sure one of them. I mean,
but Lord,
there are some people who don't have a conscience, too. And it's
sure there are.
There are some, but and I can remember.
Henry Paulson's one of those people without a conscience. The present chairman of Goldman Sachs. Ben Bernanke has no conscience. Frankly, I don't think, what's his name? The guy who made this mess, and Alan Greenspan, little Randian weirdo that objectivist piece of crap that he is. He has no conscience. And if we had horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner here right now, he could give us the full on definition of a sociopath. And that's what these people are. They don't care who they hurt. They don't think about who they hurt. They don't go to that place that David Foster Wallace was talking about in that transcript that I read from last week, where they actually try to imagine the lives of the people that they're screwing.
Don't forget Phil Graham. Stick him in there.
Yeah, Phil Graham. No conscience. No morals. No ethics. No nothing.
You know, I wonder if Paul Greenspan is going to pull a Robert McNamara, and he's going to write a memoir saying how he realizes it was all his fault and he's all sorry about it.
You know, hasn't he done a few little mea culpas here and there, Reverbo, talking about the...
That's why, yeah, it seems like he's sort of testing the waters on this. And seeing he's floating up these balloons that, yeah, maybe he, yeah, it might have been me, yeah. Signed Alan.
Yeah, I think I did that with my little hatchet. Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, Alan Greenspan, and now, of course, we have the old Maverick listening to Henry Kissinger, and it is a wiggly world, I'll tell you.
Oh, I saw a photograph. Maybe it was over at WD40.com. I saw a photograph of the Paleolithic woman, Sarah Dactyl, hugging Henry Kissinger, and the caption was quite quite terse. It simply said, "Dr. Strangelove meets Mrs. Robinson."
That's perfect. Didn't he have that guy have a thing going with Jill St. John for a while?
You know, I think you may be right, but just
maybe all these urban legends aren't urban legends at all. Maybe they're all true.
The fact that Henry Kissinger is allowed to move about in free society simply proves my point that, you know, these pigs seem never to pay for their evils.
No, they don't. Now, I don't mean to go back on a caller, and I love Albert, and I'm not really going back on him, but did you catch one thing that Albert said that we've got to caution? This is not enough this time. Albert said, once we get these people out, ... everything's going to get on the right track. Well, not this time. This time we have to go house to house. This time we can't just elect them out. We have to metaphorically annihilate them, and they cannot ever come back.
Run them. Well, what I've said before, run them to ground.
Exactly. You can't, and that's the temptation now, is everybody's going to get excited. I, for one, believe that the polls are totally inadequate, and, we know that the networks are going to pretend that the race is close because they want us to keep watching TV. But if Obama wins by a pretty big margin, I'm not going to be surprised. But be careful. Job is not done.
No, no, it is. It is absolutely not. And Lord knows I've said that before, Reverbo. And it's interesting. I've got an email in my stack here. I hope to share in a little bit makes a reference to us standing as Union soldiers at Gettysburg, whereas my previous reference has always been to because of my upbringing, the rebel soldiers. And the analogy being that there were chances when there were opportunities early in the Civil War, or what I was raised as told was the War of Northern Aggression. No, really, where the Southern Army had the Northern Army in full disorganized rout retreat. But because they hadn't eaten in a couple of days, when they ran into the supply train, they said, "Screw them. Let them keep running. We'll catch up later. But right now, we're going to stop and see what kind of goodies we just found." And that happened on more than one occasion. When there's a lesson for us in it. You know, never mind the geographics or you know whose side you were on or whatever. Blah blah blah. Where your great great granddaddy fought.
Right. Watch the way you're going here. Yeah.
If your enemy is in full retreat and you do not run them to ground and make it impossible for them to ever come back and do harm again, you know, you may not pay for it, but what's even more tragic is that your progeny, as yet unconceived and undreamt of, will. And that's what's going on right now. The Republican Party continued to exist in at least some shell form through the Great Depression. And they were not run to ground, and they were not utterly destroyed. And as a consequence, once the generations that lived through the Great Depression had died off, they brought all that evil old crap that caused it the first time back. That's
yep.
exactly what's happened.
They're vampires. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah. Drive the stake, bury them in garlic, cover them in crosses, and scatter the dirt.
Yeah, and it's a cold, smelly, stanky job. But it better get done this time, because they never forget, and they will be back. They didn't. Is it true that there were no Republican senators or
yes.
representatives? That
no
voted?
Republican ever. No, when it was passed, no Social Security passed the Congress without the vote of a single Republican.
So this concept of neocons, that doesn't describe these people. This has been going on since the New Deal, since the 30s.
I've said it time and time again. When Social Security passed and was signed into law, Republicans looked at their little sons in the cradle and said, "Son, never forget. Someday we'll kill it." And the sons grew up and they became old men, and they looked at their grandsons and they said, "We didn't get to do it, but someday you will. You'll kill Social Security. We hate it. We loathe it, we despise it, and every good thing that has ever been done for the working class in this country, someday we'll kill it all and have the America we want and we deserve." That is the, you know, never mind conservative principles or Christian values or any of the other happy garbage that the Republicans prattle on about. Their goal is to destroy and make absolutely serfs out of the working class of this country. I don't care if it's unemployment compensation. I don't care if it's a 40-hour work week. I don't care if it's workers' compensation. I don't care if it's Social Security or school lunches. There is not a blessed thing that has been progressive and liberal and decent for working-class Americans that has ever, ever been taken off the list of stuff that the Republican Party was wholeheartedly devoted and dedicated to destroying once and for all. Because, see, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to monologue on your Reverbo, but that's the difference between them and us. They have that run them to ground mentality. When Tom DeLay and that filthy Republican the cadre took over the Congress in 1994, based on Newt Gingrich's hateful teachings. They did so. Remember, they were going to create a permanent Republican majority?
Oh, you couldn't even be a lobbyist in Washington unless you were a Republican.
Bingo.
Yeah,
they had that mentality, but they were so evil that they couldn't pull it off. But for the good of this nation, for the hope of this nation, we may, come November, have a chance to put paid and put an end to the Republican Party forever. And if we don't do it, we will be judged as losers and failures by history.
I could not have said this better myself. We are at the battle is here. It's drawn, as they say. The crossroads is here. If it ain't now, it ain't ever going to be. I don't know what people are waiting for. I don't know how you could, at this point, underestimate this enemy, because they certainly don't underestimate you. They are out to destroy you.
Yeah, they hate your guts.
They do. And if we all went and died under a bridge, ice cold, that would be fine with them. So everybody better remember that. My mother's 80. My mother called me. I talked to her today, and she goes, she's 80. What? She grew up, she was born in 1928. Huh? 27, 28? No, 1930. See, my math is, I'm terrible at math. So she's a little kid growing up right in the thick of this, and she's asking me, what should I do? My investment people are calling me, and they want me to take a loss and pull out and put my money into something safe. And so what's that going to cost you, Mom? And she says, I think it cost me like $50,000. I think they're confusing my mother with Barbara Bush or one of the Rockefellers here. But I started to think, well, it's nothing out of these guys' pockets to try to get you to do this. What was their reason?
Well, who gets paid? Okay, let's just assume. Let's just assume for a moment the facts as you put them, Reverbo. Who gets the 50 large?
Well, yeah, indeed. Where does that go? She said the reason was that this way she wouldn't have to pay any capital gains tax, you know, in case it would have, like, gone up instead of crashed. And I thought, you better talk to a couple other people before you do anything here. last time I looked anyway, you paid a lot less. The people who made a living by sitting at the pool waiting for their dividends to come in the mailbox, don't they pay a lot less taxes than the rest of us who actually get a paycheck?
Yeah, I think you're onto something.
Yeah, I don't think this whole capital gains thing is scary, especially if you're not.
But what was what came out today from the American Family Association? You know, they're concerned with your soul, Reverbo, than your family. They're agents of Almighty God. Same old tired garbage. This time they've taken aim at Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, who is by far not one of my favorite Democratic senators, but whoever replaces her will be worse. That's, you know, it's always that lesser of two evils thing. She's in favor of the death tax. Somebody tell Donald Wildman that there's an economic crisis in ongoing, and really this is not the time for that discussion.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. The death tax isn't that big a deal, is it, really, for most people?
No, it only affects the Paris Hiltons of the world.
Pretty much, yeah.
But it probably has real-world implications for octogenarian Reverend Donald Wildman, ordained Methodist minister that he is. His heirs would probably be affected by the estate tax.
No doubt. It used to be you could become an ordained minister by sending $20 to some post office box. Can you still do that?
You can do it online now.
Yeah,
well, I'm one of them.
Do you get a certificate mailing?
No, they email you.
Damn! Well, hopefully you could print that bad boy out.
Oh well, no, that's where they make their money now. You can buy the kits. They've got different kits for people who want to be different kinds of reverends.
Oh yeah.
It's like the Church of All Souls or the New World All Life, you know. If you want to, email me and I'll find my certification and I'll send you the link. But I'm ordained by their church.
I believe I read that in your bio when I was looking at on your website. I was impressed. You certainly got that kind of delivery, Bob. I think you can really get the smoke coming off of the back of people's necks. I mean, it's just woo. I'm going to leave you with an idea here very quickly from the debates. And these are hyphenated words. And the words I want to leave everyone with is elastomorphic bioputty. And you'll notice on the McCain model, he's an early model replicant, and the putty, this elasto-bioputty on the early models, it starts to sag. There was a problem with it sagging under like hot lights and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like the early colorized movies that Ted Turner did. They all looked like they were done in crayon.
I don't think the guy's got long with his.
Well, hey, let me throw this out for your consideration, Reverbo, before you do go, because you've sort of opened this door, and I'm not going to just let you run through it. You have touched on something that is profound. Everybody, even the brave new foundation ad about McCain's health records focuses on his melanoma, and I received an email reminder from our buddy David in Tennessee. I think we should push harder, and I'd love to see it go into the national dialogue. And that is why, melanoma is a real issue. Don't get me wrong on that. But what David pointed out to me was that this guy has an ongoing diagnosis of diverticulitis diverticulosis. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Enlighten me on that.
Well, what happens is, and this is one of those moments for all those intelligent design fools. Let's find the intelligent design in this. What happens is, as you get older, your colon, your large intestine, the walls of it stretch and get thin, and it's all this is exacerbated by eating a low-fiber, high red meat diet, and these little pockets form in the sidewalls of your large intestine. And instead of stuff clearing out of your system like it's supposed to, little bits of matter form inside these pockets, and eventually they fester and become infected. And they can burst, and they can cause you... And the point that David was making is that diverticulitis, diverticulosis can incapacitate a human being faster than any melanoma. I mean, make a grown man weep like a baby.
Oh, my.
I mean, literally gut-wrenching pain. And he has a standing diagnosis of it, and nobody's mentioned it.
Oh, so he's the poster boy for it.
Yeah, he's literally full of poop.
Oh, God. Well, he's also the putty. He needs to be respackled.
Yeah, he's got it. Right. He's
falling apart, man.
Yeah.
It's not funny. And they're not telling you about it. It's like, what do you mean they're not telling you about it?
They're not asking either. Remember when McHoover released his medical records, you remember that, Reverbo? And it was done in like a hermetically sealed room, and they searched all the reporters. The reporters, only a select few were allowed to come in. They couldn't. I mean, they weren't allowed to come in with a hairpin that they could stick their finger and make a note in blood on the back of some reporter's neck. You know, they were not allowed. They had to remember what they read and walk out. And it was what 1,200, four thousand pages. It was like the Patriot Act of health. And they went in and, okay, he's had cancer. I see. He definitely had cancer. There's another cancer. Look, it's another cancer. Oh, boy, he's had a lot of melanoma, hadn't he? And that's what came out of it. But somebody did note that deep down in there somewhere, yeah, this guy's got an intestinal condition that is absolutely crippling. And it can also kill you.
I don't wish that on anyone. But
no, I know a fellow of standing in the community who was hospitalized two and a half, 3 weeks with diverticulosis,
And by hospitalized, I mean laid out, ran a tube into his tummy to make sure that he didn't starve to death, and whacked him out of his mind on pain meds. And 3 weeks later, he got up and, you know, he was skin and bones. But they had to do that in order to get the, what's the word, peristalsis?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that natural rhythm.
Yeah, get that going again and clear out the infection that, because, you know, your large intestine is designed to clear what your body cannot deal with.
Well,
and if you leave it in, it'll make you sick.
I don't think the lotion is doing the trick. I think the old Maverick has got to go into that high colonic or whatever.
Yeah, the rose milk, the rose milk and the oil of, oh my God, is not getting it for John McHoover.
His mind is poisoned too. That's why I was starting to think after watching him that he isn't one of these replicants. I don't think he is one of us. I think that the guy's mind is gone, and his body is obviously gone, because no one would pick Sarah Palin for a running mate unless you were seriously deranged, right? I mean, people should see all they need to see from this entire ticket at this point. I can't even believe there are undecided voters. I can't believe it.
Any undecided voter probably doesn't have a business voting. They have the mental capacities of a very ill gerbil.
There you go. From London, headline, evangelical scientists refute gravity with intelligent falling theory. I have to give the onion credit. I wish I had written it, but I didn't.
No, but those guys are geniuses. And, well, those men and women, I should say. They are absolute geniuses. Then the college humor gang hit one too, with their trailer for the new Disney film Hockey Mom. Our listener Maura sent me the link along to that. Just look up Hockey Mom and collegehumor.com. It's a big giggle.
Oh, I can't wait for this. Well, I can see it's just nothing but hijinks and hilarity when the president like kicks the bucket like. Just in the second week of office, and Hockey Mom is in suddenly.
I mean, dark. You know, everybody said, "Oh, that's the Repiglicans." I don't mean everybody, but the Repiglicans and their little collaborators and the palindromes and stuff like that in the for-profit media. Also, you know, that's unfair to talk about John McCain that way. What? I mean, I believe in. I don't believe that it's a bad. I think it's a good thing to contemplate one's own mortality from the moment one becomes aware of it. You know what was it? Why is everything a movie reference for me? We got to do something about me, Reverbo. But there's that scene where in Patton, where George C. Scott's voice is narrating, and he said, "It was said that in the days of the ancient Romans." A man walked behind Caesar's chariot, holding a wreath of laurel in his ear, or above his head, but always whispering something in his ear, whispering to remind him that it was all that all glory is fleeting, and that he is mortal and must die. You know what? It may sound a little grim, but I don't think so. I think we all need to contemplate that, and Lord knows the Repiglicans do. And that's, you know, they don't believe that they're going to fly up with the angels. You know, Agnes wants to get a Mylar Jesus and fill it with helium and a bunch of naked blow-up dolls and fill them with helium too and let them go on the highway and see how many out on a highway someday and see how many fundies wreck their cars thinking it's the rapture.
I was going to say there's going to be some traffic fatalities if you do that. That's people are going to think it's happening. Oh, Larry, it's happening.
It's the rapture. You know. Hide the boy.
Yeah. I love that plan. If you do that, would you please videotape it?
Oh, we wouldn't not. Reverbo, take care, my brother.
Make it personal, my friend.
Keep it personal. Later.
All right.
Bye now. It's our buddy Reverbo. And he's the one who introduced the line to us. Make it personal. Because, you know, this really is. This is all quite personal. Let's see if this person is still on the line. Hi, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, after I'm done here... Gonna definitely go get that salad.
Yeah, lots of roughage.
Yeah, lots of roughage. I wanted you to know that while I was, I went ahead and I called my congressman and I thanked him for voting no. So I thought that was good. And that was my little political work for the direct political action for the day. And other than that, I don't know, I haven't got a whole lot of news. Found more, Agnes Thou Pilintex. But that would make me into a very, very bad man if I sent them.
No. My eyes are still burning.
No, come on. There's a great piano center.
Oh, you know.
Anyway, I just wanted to share that little thing. So I did thank my congressman because I was glad they voted no. Now
I still now that's the one thing. I still haven't seen the full vote list. I need to know who did what, and I haven't had a chance to dig that up yet.
I'll see if I can see if I. I'm sure I've got it in my thing somewhere. So I'll go ahead and zip it over to you as soon as I can find it again.
Oh, okay. If you do find it, I'd appreciate that, Gene. I really
sure,
would.
Sure, I can do that. I'm sure. Like I said in the chat room, no good. Decent people oriented legislation goes unpunished, so I'm sure they'll come back with something or rather. I just hope he doesn't decide to go to war over this. But that's
well, it was, you know, did you watch the debates, Gene? Or not the debates, but did you watch the debate regarding the bailout today?
No, I didn't.
Well, it was weird. You know, it was the usual thing of, let's see, Spencer Baucus was managing for the Republicans and Barney Frank was managing for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, I recommend, I yield to my esteemed friend 2 minutes for blah, 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 blah. And then at the end it was, I yield to the esteemed Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, for 1 minute. And then she got up and talked for 15.
Hmm.
I guess there's a rule there that the Speaker I guess that's why she's the Speaker. You know, she speaks.
Yeah,
but all she did was point out the fact that George, you know, it wasn't some sort of screed against the Republicans. She pointed out that, and I don't see how it's assailable that what they were dealing with was the product of 8 years of failure and misdirection and misguided nonsense on the part of the Bush administration. And then John Boehner and his crowd comes out and says, "Well, Nancy Pelosi tanked this bill by turning it into a partisan blah blah blah."
Well, I hate to say it, but I know, like my mother, for one, she'll swallow the Republican line. It was funny. I was talking to her about the debate, the Obama-McCain debate, and you know, her first words out of her mouth was, "Well, John was tired." It's like, no, Mom, John just didn't want to be there at all. And, of course, she tried to kind of sell it by saying, well, I heard that it was on the news a day or two ago that if Obama loses, they want him out in Hollywood or something like this. And it's like, oh, boy, nice. This is typically Republican. And, I mean, they live out in the middle of nowhere out in rural Michigan, and all they get is Fox News. So, I mean, and she's not anywhere near computer literate, so she just is.
She is a hostage of the for-profit media. Then I think is what you're saying, Gene.
She is, and it's like, and I know that she doesn't understand how I can be so vehement. But one of these days, I'm going to tell her. Remember when we were still Mormon, and you were so vehement, it had to be this way, and you wanted to leave the church. And well, guess what? I inherited it. Only it was politics. So, with that, I guess I'll let you be, and I'll let you get to a few more callers. But I just want to let you know, I did call my congressman and Congressman Wu and say, thank you for voting yes or voting no, because I asked him to vote no. So, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Gene, very much.
Sure.
Take care. Later. Bye now. Bye. News Ninja Gene calling from Oregon. And let's see. Nope, gone. All right, let's hit the mailbag a little bit real quick. This from our buddy Tom in Richmond, California. He said, I was glad to see my representative Lynn Woolsey voted against. She usually does the right thing. I happened to have the radio on in the car today at lunch. And, of course, that's Pacific Daylight Time. So, and the main Bay Area news station, KCBS, was reporting failure of the rescue bill and blaming it on Nancy Pelosi, saying that it was necessary because of dear leaders' policies. What a bunch of whiners the Repiglickens are. Anyway, it occurred to me that the bill should have been called the ransom bill rather than bailout or rescue. That's what pirates and kidnappers demand, after all, isn't it? Yeah, it is, Tom. Yeah, it is. And the question, you know, and that's, you know, right there's the $64 million question. What happens now that the ransom demands have not been acceded to? If you thought the Bush administration was ramping up the terror before, you don't know. Because, see, they used September 11th, 2001 to terrorize the American people. They used it that way. But now, to one degree or another, their butts are in the sling, and they're not so sure now that the American people are going to give them the welfare that they want or are going to give them the ransom that they demand. I predict, he said, getting out his incredibly faulty magic eight ball and his moon and stars cloak with the moth-eaten holes in it, I predict that the terror quotient is going to go through the roof. And I've been keeping an eye on a couple of the news sites, and I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen the White House response. I haven't seen that quite yet. But the headline of CNN, of course, is "Lawmakers Point Fingers as Bailout Fails." And I'm here we go. Yeah, after the vote, Dim Leader said he was disappointed that the House failed to pass the ransom. What Dim Leader said was, we put forward a plan that was big because we got a big problem. Our strategy is to continue to address this economic situation head on. Oh, dear. We'll be working to develop a strategy. What did that bastion of staunch and sturdy resolve, Harry Reid, have to say? Democrats are doing our part to improve the administration's flawed plan, but we will need the support of more Republicans to get this done. With the stock market recording its largest point drop ever in the aftermath of this vote, it has never been more clear how important it is to put politics aside and come together to stabilize our economy for all Americans. I hope House Republicans will reconsider their vote and decide to put country first. Okay, just a question. Why is it that the Bush administration that could screw up a one-car funeral, why is it that the Bush administration's plan, those three misbegotten pages that we've been told so much about, why is it that their plan is the starting point for these discussions? Why doesn't the Democratic leadership in the Congress take each of those three misbegotten pages and fold them again until they are paper airplanes, a little squadron of three each in the House and the Senate, and fly them right out the window? Because Let's see if we can just put this in some sort of understandable, cognizable, recognizable terms. Just as he did with his entire miserable, misbegotten existence, George W. Bush screwed this up. Screwing up is what George Bush does. Whether it's not being good enough to get on the team and having to be a cheerleader instead at Andover. No slurring of cheerleaders. We're talking about George Bush's ability to achieve something. Or whether it's his inability to learn to fly an aircraft. Or whether it's his inability to find oil in the Permian Basin of Texas, where the only way to not find oil is apparently to be named George W. Bush. Why is it that we would give one iota, one scintilla of credibility, even to something as prosaic as the article A or an or the? The has to go. George Bush wrote it. We're at that point. It's okay to do that. We are rational people. We are realistic people. We deal in concrete reality. And the concrete reality is that George W. Bush and the cronies and the crooks and the creeps and the cut purses that surround him are functionally unable to do anything right. At least from the standpoint of working class America. They just can't do it. So wad the thing up into a ball, to make it into a paper airplane, and fly it out of the room. And start over. There's no constitutional principle that says the Democrats, remember the Democrats, the majority? There's no constitutional principle that says that they have to start from what George Bush and the former chairman of Goldman Sachs, still profiting from Goldman Sachs stocks, Henry Paulson, have put together. That thing, that wasn't a three-page proposal, it was a three-page conflict of interest. Start over, Democrats. Begin afresh. Begin anew. Look for real at what is causing this problem. And then fix it. There is a problem. But they did not suspend trading on Wall Street today. Not according to any of the articles that I've read. If you've got something that says different, for heaven's sakes, tell me. But they didn't suspend trading. They haven't suspended trading. And that means that we have time to get the real work done. If this really is about bad mortgages, then let's address that issue. And frankly, giving crack to a crackhead, which this bailout largely was, is not that answer. Start with the people who are really hurting. Fix that. Make them able to participate in the economy. You know, if somebody who has lost their house and is living in a vehicle that will probably soon be repoed in its own right, they're not going to be very well able to make it into the office every day. Now, are they? Solidify folks in their ability to have a roof over their head. Address all of this from Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Food, clothing, shelter. Deal with that and then go on to rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic if you must. But I got a feeling that the Titanic will evade the iceberg if you just fix the steering. Speeding it up or slowing it down if it's on the collision course is not going to change the outcome. You've got to maneuver away from the hazard, and the hazard is in the American working class. It's not in the question of whether or not 8 pounds of Ocetra caviar get delivered to the Goldman Sachs chairman's house versus 4 pounds. That's not the problem. The problem is whether working America's kids go to sleep without their bellies rumbling tonight. The problem is whether or not they are somewhere that with autumn and followed as surely as God made little green apples by winter approaching, they have a place to be safe from the elements. That's the problem. The problem is whether or not people, retirees in this country have the financial security to retire with the dignity that they were promised. Address that. Not whether or not some Wall Street Uber banker can get 3 Bentleys instead of 4. Makes sense to me. How about you? Oh, by the way, thank you to News Ninja Gene. Right there, Johnny on the spot. I've got the ransom vote numbers in front of me. And there he is, voting in favor, despite my call, and those of many, many other West Virginians. Despite my call not to give bailout welfare money, not to pay the ransom, there's Nick Joe Rahal doing exactly as he was told. Damn. Disappointing. Very disappointing. Now, here's another question for you to consider. You'll notice in Dim Leader's statement, he called upon the House to reconsider its actions. No, I'm sorry, that was Harry Reid. My bad. And if they do, what direction will they go in? All this bull that it was, it's the government's fault. It was them SEC regulations. It was the mark-to-market regulate. That's what done it. There's your culprit. Nope. The question is, will we cave to them? Or will the Democratic leadership in the House finally begin listening to the real-world solutions put forward by real progressives, real liberals, with real answers that will help working families? Will they finally begin to listen to them and tell the Repiglicans to sit down and shut up? Because it's time for the grown-ups to get to work. Barney Frank said he wasn't happy with the ransom bill as it was constituted, but said it was the best they could do. All right. Go back. Do it again. Get it right. Get the bill you want, Barney Frank. Listen to Dennis Kucinich. Listen to Ms. Jackson Lee. Listen to Len Woolsey. Listen to these people who were concerned about the lack of oversight, who were concerned about the lack of control. Listen to these people who had real-world solutions that were ignored out of fear of putting off the Repiglicans. They're in a minority for a reason, guys and ladies. Ms. Capitulosi, listen to them. Listen to the progressives and the liberals who can solve this problem. Become deaf as a stone to the whining Repiglicans of the minority. They are irrelevant. They have proven their irrelevance. Let's go to the phones and see what's happening. Oh, you quit on me too quick. You know, sometimes, come on, guys, at least let me finish the sentence. And you know the phone number, by the way, and this is Conversation Radio. If you're new to the program or new to the process, please understand that this is about conversation. We'll pay the freight on the phone call if you want us to, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you've got unlimited long-distance dialing or something of that nature, try 304-658-3333. We'll try to get you right on the air. No doubt about it. Email rolls in, by the way. I don't give this out nearly often enough. To bob@headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. Share your thoughts. This is the time when process thinking really pays off. This is the place where the ideas come from. Take advantage of the resource available. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Hey, this is Chris in Portland.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I am doing great. I watched today the Bill Moyers interview of Andrew Bacevich.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched that?
No, I have not watched it yet.
It's like 45 minutes long and in two segments, and it's like really cool because it tells you from Carter up how they all agreed, wow, you know, the whole framing of where we are in the world and in our idea of we can borrow without ever having to pay it back or without limit. Anyway, I think you need to watch that. And the next thing was the Pelosi, the thing that she said I think that pissed everybody off was that the last, at 13 minutes and 40 seconds, she said that Mr. Waxman should pursue the fraud and mismanagement and the rest. That's how she ended the statement. So it's like all the, you know, the Republicans, you know, they had to, oh, screw that. No, no way. No, 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 no. We are not behind any kind of investigations. I think that's what they were looking at.
Oh, okay, because I did. I don't know why I would have missed that, but I did.
It's 3 minutes and 40 seconds into it.
Okay, I'll check that out. That makes good sense because, but then again, the Republicans, Chris, were looking for a reason.
Of course.
Because they really are politic in this. They don't care if the working class bleeds and dies on the sidewalk.
But investigation is everything. So if they can stop it or poo-poo it or do anything to put it down, I find that is the biggest, you know, their fraud, you know, how they manipulate everything.
Yeah, because among other things, a bunch of their donors are going to start going to prison.
Bingo. So, love your show. Just wanted to touch base and see if I was off base on those.
No, you're not at all. Chris, it's awful good to hear from you. Don't be a stranger.
I won't. And look at that Andrew Bacevich from Billy Moyers.
Okay, I will do it. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And let's roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Gerard in Indiana.
Gerard, how are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, I was happy to see and thank God for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now. But I was, you know, it's getting to be so, she's about my only, can't stand CNN, she's about my only news source lately. But I was glad to see Dennis Kucinich on there, and he made a very good explanation. And, you know, one of the things that he pointed out in the bill is that none of the so-called things that were supposed to be beneficial to folks like you and I in Main Street, none of those things in that bill were really mandated. He said it was full of mays and shoulds and coulds, but nothing that was really locked in. It was funny, I was listening to Randy Rhodes earlier today, and a caller called in and said, you know, my representative is Roy Blunt, but I would trust anything that Dennis Kucinich says over Roy Blunt any day. But,
you know, Dennis is coming across as a real statesman in all this, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he got painted... So by the media, he got painted as such an extremist, but you know, and that's the kind of the sad thing is that when you listen to him and actually, you know, over a period of time on a different issues, you begin to see how really intelligent and well thought out his viewpoint is. And, you know, it's impractical in a lot of ways. I mean,
you know, that was, I got to say that that was one thing I admired out of the process today as I watched this debate or discussion or whatever you want to call it, was that Barney Frank and Spencer Baucus managed their time in such a way that everybody who had something to say about it, it would seem, had a chance to do so.
Yeah.
And it was not with regard to anticipated positions. Dennis Kucinich got to voice his opposition. Several Democrats did, as did all the Republicans that wanted to. Of course, the Republicans were insane for all the reasons that they always are.
But, yeah, and I did get to see a slice of it on C-SPAN, and we, you know, you see Barney Frank just working that floor like a madman, you know, trying to get something done. But, you know, I kind of agree with you. I just... You know, I see Nancy Pelosi at the Democratic National Convention, and she's all, you know, talking about the failures that we all know about of the Bush administration. But you kind of wonder what is her thinking when a guy, Bernanke, and the other guy, what's his name?
From Paulson?
Back, yeah. You know, they come with a proposal, both appointed by Bush, you know, and Bush is, you know, Bush was reciting just 2 months ago, was reciting the same mantra that McSame does, that, you know, the economy is fundamentally sound, you know. And if these guys are such experts, you know, they didn't see this 6 months ago, they didn't see it a year ago, you know, all this bad paper that was floating around on these mortgages, this has been going on for a long time. So why would Pelosi, you know, buy this? You know, anybody who's read even a cursory reading of Naomi Klein's book, Shock Doctrine, can see Milton Friedman's philosophy written all over this. This is a perceived crisis, and they're trying to ram this thing through. You know, if it's that bad, let's investigate it. Let's not, you know, let's have some hearings. You know, make the questions pointed, make the witnesses, you know, give you what you need, the info that you need, and proceed in that way. But to just ram it through, I mean, this is 9/11 all over again. This is, you know, all the supplementals for Iraq all over again.
And I don't think it's unfair at all, Gerard, to ask the question, this problem was a while in the making. Why is it that we can't take a little while in the fixing?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is that if we dig too deep, if we do hold hearings, if we get serious about it, if we call these core pirates on the carpet, then there's a profound risk that we'll find out what a dummied up dodge it was and what a bunch of crooks they really are. And what they're willing to do here, what they're doing here, like it or no, and I don't like it, it ought to be criminal, it ought to be investigated, and the bastards ought to be put in prison for it, is they're punishing the American people. I mean, this present ransom provision gave the Secretary of the Treasury the authority to go bail out foreign banks.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of, I mean, it did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you go back, I mean, this goes back to the beginning of Bush, you know, Junior's administration and beyond. I mean, it goes back to me, you know, I always think about the thing that Wayne always says about, you know, fixing, you know, you get people unionized and you fix a lot of economic problems.
They just go away.
Yeah. And this goes back to NAFTA, CAFTA, TAFTA, you know.
SHAFTA.
You know, you know, you start importing jobs overseas. You give these corporations, you know, tax cuts to do it. Okay, so a union guy, when you take that to street level, you get a union guy who's making a decent wage. You know, the guys at GM who are all out of work now, some of them I know who I'm related to, you know, they had decent jobs where you could raise a family and send your kid to college, working on a line in Detroit or Lansing. But it's like, you know, those jobs go away, so that, you know, and like good old Ross Perot said, and Dennis Kucinich really repeated today, but it wasn't a sucking sound going south, it was a sucking sound going up to the upper classes, is all the cash is being, the capital is being pulled out of the economic system. I mean, there's a reason that they call it currency, because it's supposed to flow, you know?
Yeah, it's supposed to be current.
Yeah, and so you lose all those jobs, you go to a war, you know, that's now $10 billion a month, sucking more capital. You know, you've got these Republicans treating the U.S. Treasury like their own piggy bank, and that's exactly what it is. You know, and you're not going to fix that overnight. You're not going to fix that with a four-page bill. I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen.
You know, Gerard, I've got a buddy. It was an old running gag. He'd go to the ATM machine. And he'd punch in his little PIN number, and out would spit $20 or whatever. And he'd take the $20 bill and his card in hand, and he'd yell, "I won! I won!" And that's isn't that what the Goldman Sachs and the rest of these crooks are doing? Only we're the ATM.
Yeah.
And the money doesn't come out $20 at a time. It just flies out.
And the thing that always gets me, you know, especially around election time, is how these candidates, a lot of them presidential, but you know, for other offices as well, they all talk about doing things for the small businessman because the small businessman is the biggest employer in the nation. Well, you know, how can a small businessman, you know, small businessmen have mortgages too. You know, and how can a small businessman, you know, say you're a plumber, you've got your own plumbing business. Maybe you've got a couple of employees and they both got vans, you know. How do you keep them on the road with gas at this price? You know, how do you, you know, the price of it, how do you provide them with decent health coverage? You know, a responsible person, if I'm a small businessman, I'm responsible, you know. It used to be back in the 80s, or actually the beginning of the 80s, before Reagan went in, companies would compete to have the best health plans because they felt that that's the way to get the best people. But now it's like, you know, that's all changed. That's all gone away. You know, it's just, it just... seems to me it's just a step down the path, and each step we get closer and closer to, you know, grinding it into the ground.
It does feel that way, and I don't know that that's a question of feeling. It may be. Look, we're dealing with a Republican Party, Gerard, that has as its stated goal the outright destruction of the American form of government as we know it. That's what Grover Norquist was talking about when he said weakening the federal government to the point that it can be drowned in a bathtub. The only reason to weaken something to the point that it can be drowned in a bathtub is so that you can drown it in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Because taking care of something that weak is awfully hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Look at, you know, I feel almost bad mentioning her name, but this is one of those places where it counts. Look at Sarah Palin. Look at her. This is a woman who congratulated the meeting of the Alaska Independence Party, whose leader hated the United States so much that he refused to be buried on what was, by virtue of the Alaska's presence in the Union, American soil. No kidding. Really. These people, and I don't know when the church going up, standing upright, Christian, fundamentalist, snake-handling, floor-rolling, strychnine-drinking, tongue-speaking freaks are going to figure it out, but they love all this patriot. They drape their crosses in flags. I don't know when they're going to figure it out, Gerard. But the people who are driving them like sheep to the slaughter are people who hate the country that these fundies and working class repiglickens claim to love. Why can't they understand that, Gerard?
I don't know. You know, it's like the whole issue right around the conventions of, you know, when she was finally brought in, you know, supposedly a strategy to pull Hillary supporters away from Barack Obama. What woman? I don't know. If I sound sexist, I guess I sound sexist. But you're talking to a guy who when he was in college, I had this little Honda Civic, and I took a lot of grief from my relatives because I had a bumper sticker on the back of it that said "Uppity Women Unite." Because I've always felt, you know, women just have a special view on things, and especially women who are fairly intelligent. And I couldn't figure out how any intelligent woman would change her vote, even if she was a Hillary supporter, to John McCain and Sarah Palin's ticket simply because she was a woman.
Well, it's a good thing that it's a
looking at the record. I mean, do you not? I mean, would an intelligent woman not realize that ticket represents another Samuel Alito, another Roberts, both of whom, you know, given the opportunity, would overturn Roe v. Wade at the drop of a hat? Do they not understand that?
Well, you know, look, Kathleen Parker, who finally sort of bit her tongue till it bled and finally had to say what she could not stand no longer saying, no matter what kind of neocon repiglican she is, and called for Palin to leave the ticket, you know, she referred to her as a new kind of feminist. You know, talk about taking the language out behind the barn and just ball-batting it to death, to a bloody pulp. New kind of feminist apparently means not a feminist at all. But
I know a lot of, you know, those feminists are just lining up to participate in beauty pageants like Sarah Palin did.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Sure. And you know, that's one of those flush Flemball things. You know, because he said that, you know, my friends, the feminists are only feminists because men won't talk to them because they're ugly. Well, no, Flush, that ain't necessarily true. Because if it was me, I wouldn't talk to Sarah Palin. Not because she's ugly. She's reasonably attractive. She's no Agnes, but she's reasonably attractive for a woman her age. But I wouldn't talk to that woman because she's an idiot. I mean, it lowers an intelligence person's IQ is lowered simply by engaging in conversation with a moron like her. And that's, you know, that's all that I can figure. I've seen it. I saw it the other day. I may have even mentioned it on the air. Agnes and I were out, and we passed a vehicle that had had bumper stickers on the rearview window. The first one said Christian and a Democrat. The second one said Hillary. The third one said McCain.
Oh, Jesus.
They really are out there. And after we end this call and you turn your speakers back up, you're going to be horrified at the audio I'm about to play.
Mm.
I promise.
Well, I just wanted, again, to laud and praise Dennis Kucinich. I'm glad he's, I hope he's successful. He's running this fall, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's on the ballot.
I hope he's successful because we sure need him in the Congress. I haven't checked to see what my congressman has voted on that yet, but.
Well, you know, I don't think he's one who sticks his finger in the wind. Yeah, I don't think Dennis sticks his wets his finger and sticks it in the air to see which way the wind's blowing.
No.
I think he voted his conscience on this, whether his constituents were largely in agreement or not. But given the district that he serves, you know, these people have lived the Bush economic miracle, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was voting his constituents' will.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a race I'll be paying attention to. It would be completely bass-ackwards for the rest of the country to start trying to get clean and sober, and for a district in northeastern Ohio to suddenly decide that they want to get loaded instead and replace Dennis. But, you know, weirder things have happened.
Well, hopefully we can get that employee's pre-choice. You know, the earlier caller said we got so much work to do, and I keep going back to the thing that Mike Malloy said when Alito was put in. We've got to organize. We got 30 years of organizing ahead of us, at least.
Yeah, that. There's no matter how large the victory that we might have at any given time, Gerard, there is always miles ahead of hard work. And you know what? That's nothing to be bummed out about. The fact of the matter is, hard work is gratifying. Hard work is pleasing. And the rest one gets in the midst of hard work is the best rest of all. So, you know, I'm not disturbed by that.
Yep.
Well, take care, Gerard. It's awfully good hearing from you. Don't be such a stranger, all right?
All right.
Okay, take care.
Yep.
Bye now. From the middle of America, our buddy Gerard calling in. Good to hear from him. Now, I promised some audio, and I'm going to play it for you. News Ninja Gene sent this along to me, and it is audio that goes with a video. When you hear the voice, you'll probably be able to sort of create a mental picture of the person speaking. What we have here are three white folks on a four-wheeler somewhere in rural America. This is what we're up against. And from this, please understand, it's a tall slope. So with that, just give it a listen.
Taste is not made. When we're at war with the Arabs, we do not need a damn Arab president.
Aye, huh? You better not aim that camera before you touch
it. Well, come here and tell him about cutting his head off and stuff. She didn't...
Cutting his head off?
Oh. Yes.
Uh-oh.
When you go over there to them Arab countries, they are cutting off the heads of the soldiers of our Americans. And his middle name is Hussein. And we want to...
What's
we want to vote for
name?
Somebody with a name like Barack Hussein Obama. Why don't we just vote for...
Ask for that beer.
We want to vote for somebody with a name like Barack Hussein Obama.
Why don't we cut your fucking hair?
Well, why are we electing an Arab when we're at war with Iraq and Iran? I mean, come on, American people. This don't make much sense, does it? We're at war with the Middle East, but we want somebody for president with a name like Barack Hussein Obama? Give us a break.
You ain't worth no fucking break.
You can, stand down there.
You can cut that part out.
Where'd you get that stuff there?
Sir, got it.
Tell him about cutting his head off, sir.
But,
They've been cutting off our American soldiers' heads.
I bet it was my head off, wasn't it?
Were you going to cut Carlin's head off?
No, he's from Spain.
Oh.
Spain is our ally. But Iran, Iraq, and Lebanon, and all
the
countries.
I took the four rivers, I made them mad.
You know what?
I voted fucking the rivers getting above
me. I wanted Hillary Clinton for president. I voted for Hillary Clinton.
There you go. There you go. You know, the fact that this woman speaks with a rural Appalachian accent makes me want to cry. Because you know what? I'll just bet you her family has not always been this stupid. She's been dumbed down by 20 years of flush flimball. It's probably the only AM signal that reaches up the holler. Fox is probably the only news channel that comes via the cable up the holler. Or maybe it came free with the base package on the satellite dish. I don't play this with any pleasure. And by the way, for those of you who are curious, who think, well, you know, maybe that's probably been there for... No. This video was uploaded on September the 26th. We have work to do. Now, obviously, these three people on a four-wheeler, never mind that you're not even supposed to carry more than the rider, him or herself, these three people on a four-wheeler are drunker than Adam's off ox. But you know what? There's a reason that the Romans coined the phrase in vino veritas. In wine is truth. To the same extent, or by the same token, that Mel Gibson started railing about the Jews when he too was drunker than Adam's off ox and he got pulled over by the cops. This woman rails drunkenly about Barack Hussein Obama. Those words of the drunk are not words. Those aren't lies. In vino veritas. And the same thing goes for Colt 45 malt liquor. Or whatever it was they were a-guzzling that night. Hard to swallow. Hard to stomach. But it absolutely is the emblematic of the work that we have to do. An email that came in late last week after when I wasn't on the air, but bears, especially under the current circumstances, bears sharing with you. It came from our good buddy Scott in Sweden. And he wrote after hearing the program last Wednesday night. He said, Wednesday's program had more to chew over than a crate of beef jerky. Where to begin? I hope you don't mind a bit of telescopic style. No, telescope. Telesoloscope. First, all that doom and gloom. What was it Franklin Hussein Roosevelt said in reference to the Great Republican Depression version 1.0 of the 1930s? Quote, "This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. In every dark hour of our national life, a leadership of frankness and vigor has met with that understanding and support of the people themselves, which is essential to victory. I am convinced that you will again give that support to leadership in these critical days." So Jumpin' Jehoshaphat, get a grip on your nerves before you scare somebody witless. "Yes, the situation is dire, but let's get Granny's silver cleaner out of the cupboard and go to work on this cloud silver lining before it depreciates totally to nothing. First, since this is the Repiglickin Depression version 2.0, we do not have to exactly reinvent the remedies from scratch. A lot can be dusted off and reapplied. You have all sorts of beta-tested and refined social welfare state models to pick and choose from in Europe, a luxury that would have made FDR cast off his wheelchair and click his heels in joy. I mean, y'all don't have to start over from the get-go. Of Kucinich's 14 points, a full dozen are stocked items on any EU state's policy shelf. Second, there was 3.5 years between Black Monday, October 1929, and FDR's inauguration. We ought to get Barack Delano Obama's in only 3.5 months. It's an exaggeration that the U.S. doesn't have an industrial base anymore. All of our manufacturing has moved to China. We can discuss that. Well, since the service and financial sectors have grown so huge, this forces the percentage figures of manufacturing to appear a bit lower than the absolute figures. Also, when the USSR raped and bombed out Eastern Europe and sent that part of the world into a 50-year manufacturing never-never land, it did indeed bounce back rather robustly once the Ruskies hauled their friendship asses back home. The more advanced the country in 1940, the quicker it recovered. There is indeed a manufacturing competitive tradition that took a hell of a licking but came up ticking. So while America's physical capital is depleted, in a sense, John McCain actually does have a point in the blind pig finding an acorn sort of way. Those productive traditions remain, and with sane policies and incentives can be brought back to life. It's not going to take the U.S. 50 years. Third, our buddy Tom Hartman discussed a simple 0.25% tax on sales of stocks that could completely finance this so-called bailout. Main Street need not be pillaged at all. The FEC used to be financed this way, and it generated so much money they ended the program in embarrassment, and the London Exchange still uses it. A simple 0.25% tax on $100 of stock sales is a measly quarter. But look at the huge volume of sales. Incidentally, if you did this to spam, you'd kill mass emailings. Even a hundredth of a penny per email would bankrupt the weenie widgets very quickly. In a few short years, the bailout is recouped. This is one of those FDR things ready to dust off and reapply. And the sleazy bastards get to fund their own bailout. Fourth, there is no hard and fast rule that an October surprise has to succeed. And remember, this does go back to pre-Friday. Finally, McCain's suspended campaign and debate skedaddle, coupled with hide-and-seek with Sarah Palin, only 40-some days out from the election, is wonderful news. McCain was already bouncing around like a fart in a mitten. Oh, I'm hanging on to that one. The guy is as stable as a unicyclist with a flat tire. Scott will be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Stable as a unicyclist with a flat tire. I'm betting well over half the nation took one look at that stunt and rolled their eyes until they hit the optic nerve. He couldn't compete with the Denver Dems, so he canceled everything in St. Paul until he could roll out Moose Lips, who is, incidentally, smelling muskier than a husky by the day. Man, this isn't an email. This is a lyric. Muskier than a husky. America can stand only so much circus and farce, especially when the economic shinola hits the air dispersal device. If I were Obama, I'd make a series of cartoon campaign ads with moose and squirrel. Rocky. And now... Bullwinkle. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. Rocky. But that trick never works. Bullwinkle. But this time for sure. Presto! Pulls out a giant IOU. Well, I'm getting close. Scott says in closing, take heart, lads. Them rebels making one last charge on our position, and it looks like Pickett's men. Just stand firm, and the day is ours. I told you there'd be another Civil War reference in the program this evening. Brilliant from top to bottom. Thank you so much, Scott. I know that you can't listen live, so you listen in delay. And we really appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate all of your thoughts. Never hesitate to... none of you. Sometimes it takes more than a sentence or two to get a thought together. Don't think that it won't get read because it's long. I got 3 hours a night, and they're your 3 hours. You know what I mean? So let's go back to the phones. Hey, well,
Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. What do you think about the stall on the bill? I'm all for it.
Well, that was my impression. My biggest question, Kevin, is what are these? Because we're dealing again. If foreign psychotherapist Rick Goodner was handy, he'd tell us we're dealing with psychopaths, and psychopaths have no conscience.
Oh, yeah.
And what I got to ask is, what are the psychopaths and the sociopaths on Wall Street going to do to the American working class to punish us for the fact that we didn't hand over the farm? That's my only question. What happened today was the right thing.
Yeah.
At least, let me back up. What the Democrats in Congress did who voted against this ransom, they did it for the right reasons. The Republicans generally voted against it because they're hateful, evil, nasty, vile, you know.
Crybabies, too.
And that.
Hurt their feelings.
So, I'm glad that we forestalled the panic. The question is, you know, what plays out in the next act?
Well, I think the longer it's delayed, it's the better for Democrats. Because the thing is, then, let's say if the McCain's election is tanking in biblical proportions. If anybody votes for him after this week of performance, then I question their sanity.
Oh, I've questioned their sanity all along, but I know that they will vote for him.
And even though that's too bad, it's 45% of America, of the voting populace, but still. I have a feeling the Democrats, because of these past events that have occurred in the past 2 weeks, will take, you know, all three sectors, the executive and the Congress, back. We can basically bail out this country in the manner you suggest by putting a 2% tax or a 0.2% tax or whatever.
Yeah. I don't, well, you know, that you're talking about one aspect. But this is a wholesale mess, isn't it, Kevin? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hartman's probably right. But there's more to be dealt with.
Well, also we got to build up our industrial base again.
And that's where the green jobs come in.
Yeah.
That part of what David Swanson wrote about that was that really grabbed me. Yeah. Okay. If we can print $700 billion of money to throw away, because I mean, look, you can't get around the fact that the market lost more in value in one day today than the whole bailout would have been worth had we given it to them. There's got to be an underpinning, and you can't create a pyramid by putting the capstone up on a crane and hoping that the pyramid, the rest of the building materializes underneath it.
That is true, and the thing is, we need to bring back green jobs and manufacturing jobs, and hopefully put the two together. You know, GM has been making green cars for South America for the past 30 years.
But you'd never know it. You'd never know it here, would you?
Exactly, because in Brazil, a GM car runs on sugarcane and gas.
We don't have the climate for the sugarcane, but there is other stuff that can be done.
Well, we can import the sugarcane. The Cuba, Jamaica, Mexico,
yeah,
Hawaii, Florida, the whole Gulf Coast grows sugarcane.
Well, and I'm not so crazy about we went bananas over corn-based ethanol. That's
I'm not
no answer.
Crazy about that either.
But biodiesel? Now, yeah. Biodiesel is another matter entirely.
Oh yeah. Well, I said that's the next car I'm going to get.
Yeah,
I never need a car.
Yeah, a diesel automobile, you mean?
A biodiesel.
Yeah.
Or something that runs on sugarcane.
Hey, you know what? For very, very little bucks, I think it's Mike in Woodstock who runs the grease car.
Yeah.
And he for not much bucks at all, you can go out and get, say, a 1983 300 series diesel Mercedes sedan. That thing converts to biodiesel like that.
Yeah. And that's what I'm going to do if I ever am in need of a car again. And just fill it up with Crisco.
Yeah. And you know, the beautiful thing is when you drive along, your car smells like the French fries are done. I mean, that's a beautiful smell.
Well, also, I think that's an urban myth, though. I don't know if that's 100% true, that you come out smelling like French fries.
Well, no, it just smells, it's a hot grease smell. That's what the French fry smell is.
Oh, but they're saying you'll come out of the car smelling like it.
Oh, no. Now, I tell you, I've owned a diesel automobile in the past. And that's one thing about petroleum diesel fuel. It's hard to grab that handle and fill the tank up with petroleum diesel and not smell like it. And that was one of the downsides to it. You know, never, and you know, it's a learning curve, and you figure it out pretty quickly. When you've got, when you've got the suit on and you're on the way to the business meeting, never stop to fill the tank up. Always fill up at the end of the day so you can go home and shower the diesel off. But it's,
well, if I get biodiesel, I just get a couple of gallons of Crisco.
Well, there. Well, look at this point, gasoline and Lord knows petroleum diesel are approaching the same cost as cooking oil.
Oh yeah.
And because diesel engines don't worry about things like cholesterol and triglycerides, you can pour the cheap stuff in.
Oh yeah.
Or for that, well, I don't know what's going on in Brooklyn and the rest of Greater New York, but some of the cities used to be you could just go around to the local Chinese restaurant, your local McDonald's. You know, can I take your oil off your hands?
I've seen that in the city. They have collection vehicles.
Right, and they're beginning to capitalize on it. It used to be that they would just give it to you.
Yeah.
And you'd haul it away.
No, they're selling it now. Because I see it in, like, the more artsy neighborhoods now that they're selling it in the restaurant. And there are vans that are coming in and collecting it. So, they're starting to capitalize on it, or even in here. But, again, you know, there are too few of them out there, and not enough people are educated on them. And that's the problem, I think. You know, people in general just aren't. They're laughing a lot of this stuff off.
Well, I don't think laughter is called for. I can't celebrate as people who listen to this program are being devastated.
Yeah, well, you know, I think what's happening is that people are so used to the pain, they're scared of the unknown, and that's the problem with.
Well, and hence the. The panicky squealing of the Bush administration. It's the same tactic they used after September the 11th, only this time they know that it's their butts. And like was pointed out a few minutes ago by, I think, Chris, what really lit them up was the fact that toward the end, Nancy Pelosi said, by God, let's find out who's responsible for this. Because if that happens, you're going to see a lot of people who are used to wearing bespoke Savile Row suits wearing orange jumpsuits and plastic orange flip-flops.
Oh, yeah.
I like that idea.
I do, too, or I prefer the Chinese style of justice.
Oh, you mean the swift and permanent kind?
Oh, yeah. Some of these people. I have a colleague that I work with, and he's a Chinese he just became a U.S. citizen a few years back. But he said, in China, if something like this was to happen, not only would the fortunes be recouped, but, you know, a couple of gunshots to the head and your organs would be out on the market.
Oh, God, the visual, Kevin.
You know, and...
Well,
you know,
but you're there, I mean, you're there in the heart of the matter.
Well,
are New Yorkers on the streets saying about all this?
They've been having demonstrations in Wall Street.
Oh, I know. There was one planned where people were going to take their trash and dump it on Wall Street and stuff like that.
Yeah, they've been doing that, and what they've done is split up the stock market too, because they have it in like the Wall Street, in the traditional Wall Street now, but they also have trading floors in Midtown around the Times Square area. So they've been protesting in both spots, and they're picketing, saying, you know, jail Bush and all this other stuff, and you know they all need to go to prison and all.
Right. But, I mean, like your neighbors and so forth, are y'all
talking
in the neighborhood?
Yeah, most of the people around my way, a lot of them took a bath on the first economic collapse, like back in 2001 with the dot-coms and all that. A lot of them just converted their money to cash years ago, and, you know, a lot of them bought gold and, so you know, tangible stuff.
So,
and a lot of them just said, look, we're just going to hold out. At least that's what my mother did. Because she lost a chunk with the dot-com bust.
Okay, let's try to put this in some perspective. Which is getting more talk right now? The ransom bailout, what have you, or the failure of the Yankees and Mets?
Ransom bailout. Hands down.
Okay, maybe it's the wrong neighborhood, because I know there's got to be some real... Well, I've read some. There's some real unhappiness over there, especially over the Yankees.
This is Brooklyn. This is like the West Indian capital of the Northeast.
Oh, okay.
You can play cricket here.
Okay,
so baseball, you may have to go out to like the suburbs and all that, but Brooklyn is predominantly West Indian.
Okay.
So, you know, people are talking about this, trust me. And in New York... It's all about the money at the end of the day.
Well, New York is where the money lives.
Yeah.
And that both physically and figuratively. So I'm just curious. I'll be curious in coming days, and I hope you'll report in, Kevin. Are restaurants boarding up?
Because the thing is, even though Wall Street is a very important sector, there are other sectors of the economy, and I guess restaurants haven't felt it yet, but what's worrying, like myself and a whole lot of other people, if Wall Street tanks, you know, it's the rippling effect.
And that's what I heard some of today in watching the discussion in the House. You know, all these, there were some real doom and gloomers up there saying, well, you know, there are landlords who are kicking businesses out on the street because the mortgages are failing and blah blah blah. You know, not necessarily saying in New York, but businesses can't get the credit they need to meet their monthly blah 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 blah. And
well, that's I think an urban myth, because that probably won't happen until down the line. It's like, you know, and go back to the Depression. Everybody thought that Black Monday in October, you know, everybody just started. No, a lot of this stuff didn't start happening until 6 months, a year, 2 years after the fact.
And, yeah, that's what Scott from Sweden was talking about. There were 3.5 years between the crash itself and the devastating effect. Because there was a Republican in office who continued to perpetuate the poisonous Republican policies that Republicans perpetuate.
And, you know, I decided to do some writing, and I am kind of writing a book now, or doing a manuscript. Growing up in the neoconservative era, coming of age.
Well, that's certainly a valid topic, and I'll be curious and interested to read it as you pull it together.
Yeah,
because that's where a lot of this audience is, and frankly, with the exception of anybody 70 or older, there aren't any of us who have experienced. Well, I mean, let's see, 8 years. If you were born in 1952, which would make you 56,
mm-hmm.
You knew 8 years of Eisenhower.
He wasn't really a conservative, though.
Oh, go back and read. Yeah, I did. Yeah, he was pretty much.
Well,
I mean, there was a, there was There were the beginnings of a national health care discussion even back then, and Eisenhower opposed it at every turn.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fact. So there was 8 years of Eisenhower, 8 years of Nixon and Ford, 8 years of Reagan, that's 24, then 4 years of Bush 1, that's 28, and 8 years of dim leader, that's 36. So a 56-year-old has had 36 years of right-wing conservative rule.
What about a 37-year-old like myself?
Yeah.
I was born in Nixon, had a 4-year break during the Carter administration, 8 years of Reagan, 4 years of Bush, a little break during the Clinton, and now another 8 years of Bush.
Right. And you know, this extends. You know, what do you say, what kind of, and, you know, I can ask this of my own kids. What kind of an America are they familiar with?
Well, the America that I grew up in has been a series of one step forward, two steps back for a lot of people in my generation.
I think that's a fair assessment.
And okay, I forgot your age, Bob.
I'm 45, so.
Okay, I don't know if you would be considered Generation X.
No, I am the very last straggling tail end of the baby boom, technically.
Okay, I'm Generation X, and you know they call us the slacker generation. There's a reason why. It's because our life has been one step forward, two steps back.
So,
and a lot of us are living extended adolescence in many ways.
Well, and a lot of you were not permitted to go into the same adulthood that the generation previous was able to, because the stuff that made it, you know, the stuff that made it possible for the middle class to flower began being torn apart.
And Reagan.
Nixon. When you get right down to it, you know, the politics of fear and the hate and the Southern strategy and all of that stuff. Yeah. That was all. Look at the. Okay, here's a great comparison as you start analyzing things. Look at the rise of right to work legislation, as
it's
called.
Oh yeah, goes back to Nixon in the South.
Yeah, it was a way to deunionize the places like textile mills in the South.
Oh, yeah.
And in so doing, the so-called, well, you know, and it's all born out of racism too. Okay, all right wing policies of fear can be traced back to bigotry, racism, prejudice, and you know all the worst things about America.
Well, that's one thing I've included, that you know, conservatism, because even during the McCarthy period, it just gave people a license to go back to their base. How would I say the lesser angels?
Their baser instincts. You were right on target.
Exactly. You know, if somebody is gay, made it okay for you to call them the F word. You know, if somebody was Jewish, you made it okay. You know, if they didn't.
Yeah.
And it gave people that freedom. And I noticed that more so in the past 8 years, and especially and this is what turned me off of leaving New York. Is because it just seemed like when I was living in Florida and my travels throughout the Midwest and even in the D.C. area, it just gave people that license. And that concerns me.
It should.
What if you step out of some of the outer counties here in New York?
Oh, look, you get into the hills of upstate New York, you got every bit as much redneckery as you got down the rest of the Appalachians. Sure.
Yeah.
And our friend Cindy out west in the shadow of Mount St. Helens has pointed out you change the dialect, but the attitude remains the same all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
The South and the hills of Appalachia don't have a lock on ignorance and bigotry. And see, I stopped the audio of that before we got to the really nasty part where the racial epithets started flying around. There's only so much I can stand to go out via a broadcast that I make.
I just joined in. Did you play something?
Oh, yeah. The ignorant redneck woman talking about Barack Hussein Obama, and he's an Arab, and you know, on, and you know, and then I voted for Hillary. I wanted Hillary.
Well, this is black preacher up in Harlem that is saying, "Don't vote for the Negro."
Oh, I've seen a number of books by the black clerics who, you know, I'm sure were well paid
by the Republican Party. Yeah, and those idiots in Florida who are saying, who held up banners at a Barack rally. You know, like I said, black Republicans, it's a con.
Well, that right, yeah. The Black Republicans of America or whatever that puts out the billboards that says Martin Luther King was a registered Republican. Remember those? Beautiful stuff. Well, we're almost at the end of the program, Kevin. Got to roll along, but good to hear from you. Keep an ear to the street, would you? And report back to us. I want to know what's going on right there at the epicenter of the so-called crisis.
Okay, then. I'll talk to you soon, Bob.
All right. Take care, Kevin. Good to hear from you.
Okay.
Bye now. Our buddy Kevin in Brooklyn. We'll keep things rolling real quick. Oh, no. Gone again. Couple of emails. As I mentioned, we heard from our pal Cindy up in the Great Northwest. She says, how long have we been predicting this? I don't think a depression in today's world would be as bad as 1930. We have highways, vehicles, communication, educational tools that nobody had back then. And I can't help noting that everything that she just mentioned, highways, vehicles, communication, educational tools, those are all liberal policies. Yeah, liberalism. So that's in the plus column. Then the Great Depression happened at the end of the cowboy days and before the boom of the automobile days. Half of America was still horse-drawn back then. Not today. We're different, and we have filled out all those immense empty spaces so that there isn't months' worth of riding a horse to find the next town. We can take better care of ourselves if we get down and out. I'd put my bet on the people, hands down, and not invite the thieves to the next new table we set. Amen, amen, amen. We should rewrite the Constitution, make Republican ideas that blow up the economy to be unlawful, put it in a new Constitution. Oh, Lord, can you imagine a constitutional convention now? You wouldn't be able to get into the building for all the right-wing fundies screaming about it, a constitutional ban on how people have sex or who they care to marry or which babies they choose to bring in the world. That little part, I don't know, Cindy. I'm not so much with that. But I understand the reasoning above. The question is, however, these are the automobile days, but how long will they remain the automobile days? I don't know if you're reading the news out of the Southeast, but it's getting a little tough to find gasoline from time to time in places like Atlanta and Charlotte and points elsewhere. And she points out it hurts more at 56 years old than 37 because I'm getting too old to rebuild my life. You don't have the strength when you get older. Yeah. And a brand new email to share with you. Subject line, conservatives of the world, beware. We're hearing you in Melbourne, Australia, Bob, and we like what we hear. The entire globe is being affected by the criminality of Wall Street, and the entire world is watching. It appears the sleeping giant of the American people is stirring. I'm reminded of Peter Finch and Network encouraging the nation to shout from their windows, I've had enough and I'm not going to take it anymore, or words to that effect. Conservative governments around the world can only tell us to eat cake while the people starve for so long. Has the world of crooked finance and crooked government finally reached critical mass brought about by their own out-of-control greed and lust for power? I, for one, do hope so. Conservatives, beware. The king is dead. Long live the people. That from Kevin in Melbourne, Australia. He says, P.S., a chill is running down my spine as I listen to the recording of that woman speaking in that rich southern accent. I know.
I know. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Australia, John Fox launched his maiden show of the new incarnation of All Foxed Up last night on the Horn. That would be Sunday night, at least here in the Eastern U.S. time zone, 9 p.m. Eastern. And he followed Rama's Help Me, I'm an American, which is a brilliant program, by the way. And folks joined to listen to that in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. It's a profoundly good show. So John followed that at 9 p.m. Eastern and did a marvelous job. I'm looking forward to more. And we've got to make sure that we get the archives all set up and properly in place so that we can play it during the week for you and let you hear it if you can't listen live. But it is a live program, and John does take calls. He's even figured out that much of it and does it all, produces it all himself from right there in Sydney. So do tune in. We've got another weekend show to add to the lineup. That's now Rick Goodner, Rick's Place, and Rick Smith, the Rick Smith Show from Pennsylvania. And, of course, Billy Shears and Night Sounds, which kicked off the whole weekend schedule. And now, John Fox and All Foxed Up. It's exciting. I tell you, it is. So try it out next Sunday evening. So it's about 5 minutes before the hour. We're pretty much done for the evening. We'll be back tomorrow night, of course, same time. And Guy James will be back to start his week tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern, I assume, as will Mark Levine. This is the only program this Monday, so I'll just start rolling this the repeat of this show afterwards on the rerun stream. Thank you to everyone who is helping to keep the Horn alive and keep this dialogue and this discussion going, each and every one of you. We will soon be on top one more day of another month, and that means we reset the fundraising clock to zero. It takes a lot more, but we have we set as a very simple goal a bare minimum of $2,000 a month to keep the Horn programming going. Like I said, it actually takes considerably more, but we didn't want to ask any more of people than was a bare minimum necessary. So we will reset to zero on Wednesday, and I will tell you that we almost, thanks to a great deal of generosity and determination, we almost made it all the way to $2,000 this month of September. And thank you for that. It's nice to see the top of the hole once in a while that we spend most of the time in the bottom of not being able to see. Thank you. Conversation radio happens because you want it to happen. And it happens because you want it to happen all over the world. And your determination, coupled with the determination of those of us here at the Horn, whether it be Ben Birch, John Fox, Peter Godbold, Guy James, Mark Levine, myself, the bloggers, the news ninjas, the moderators in the chat room, it's a stunning and determined effort that surpasses every day my wildest hopes for what we might create. Tomorrow we will rejoin the conversation. We will take it wherever you wish it to go. And perhaps I can find a little time to talk about where I was this past weekend. There was a great deal of tremendous information shared out, and I want to share it with you. Always, 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 RMR. Gina, it's all for you.